Everybody, Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live from beautiful downtown North Connecticut in front of a live studio audience. I'm Mike DePalma alongside my co-host Danny Santarella. Tony D is still out on the IR.
I'm very disappointed.
He's been to a show in 2014, I don't think.
I look forward to seeing him every week.
I just wanted to hear him talk about how great Macklemore is. Did you know he likes Macklemore? I mean, he hates Macklemore, and he won every award. I didn't watch any of the Grammys, did you? Yeah, I don't mess with it. But
I usually do, but I didn't this year.
I didn't watch one
I have
instant of it. I don't know, some sort of maybe Ratatouille. I was watching something much more entertaining than that. We do have joining us from the Hoboken studio, comedian extraordinaire, Neil Lynch. Neil, how you doing, brother?
I'm here, and I'm ready to rumble. I'm ready for this epic episode that we got ahead of us right now.
I mean, the thing that we did to this week, which is really good, we had a lot of show prep. We went heavy in the show prep this week. We figured, you know what, we don't have any guests, and I will take, you know, a little serious note. Our producer, Matt Scully, lost his father-in-law this past week, so our thoughts go out to the Sweeney family. I mean, there are more, and they're from Massachusetts, there are more Boston names than Sweeney. Marion to Scully.
Close.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like a podcast going out to sort of right outside of Boston. Out in Worcester, just Sweeney and Scully.
They're just proper people.
Oh, my God.
God bless everyone.
They are. We talk about it all the time. That's why I want to have Mike Heron on one day to talk, because he's a big Boston guy, you know, like outside of Boston guy. And the idea that, like, New Yorkers think this is, like, this tough town, not even close.
I got to tell you something, too. I don't have a problem with any one of the Boston area sports teams because of the fans. I mean, seriously, they're just tough people, good people. I like them. I think they're blue-collar.
Yeah.
They're not as, like you said before, can we change this from comedian extraordinaire to just human being extraordinaire? Neil Lynch, he's just the best, period. And he knows it. He's humble, but he knows it.
Yeah. Neil, we got some callers already on hold. So you want to just take some calls? Who knows? I don't even know where this guy's from. It's not a local guy. We're going to go out to line number one, waiting patiently on hold. You're on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. Dreamer. I got a lot of background noise, so go ahead and put me on mute, but I'm giving you guys a listen. I'm normally on with Roger, the scorekeeper, on Saturday mornings. But like I said, I got a lot of background noise, so go ahead and put me on mute, and I'm just here to enjoy the show today, man. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, brother. There you go. Check them out. That's Roger's the guy who's kind of the guy behind all of this on NDB Media. He's called in the show before, awesome guy. He's got the show, and you call him the scorekeeper. Oh, Roger Noriega. So he's got a show on Saturday. So check it out if you're listening. You know, you can get it through NDB Media.net or on Block Up Radio. Check it out. But, yeah, so, I mean, I was just thinking that on my drive in, thinking about the Scullys and the Sweeneys.
Yeah.
I mean, that is either one of those guys. And I met his father-in-law and Maddie's wedding. And he's just a fantastic, exactly a guy you would think would be from somewhere outside of Boston. They're from the town that Barstool Sports is originated from, whatever town that is. You know what town that is, Neil?
I think it's Newtown, or no?
Newton.
It might be.
Yeah, I know it's Newton. But it's the Newton's like a suburb of this. I don't know. I forget the name of the town, so I don't want to belabor it. But, you know, just, you know, these guys are soul to the earth people up there, New Englanders. They don't consider people down in our part of Connecticut New England at all. So,
no, I know.
Yeah. You open your mouth, they're like, yeah, you're not from New England, brother.
You know what you really, like, the nexus of that is Foxwoods.
Yeah.
There's just people up there that are like, where are you from? And you're like, you know, no, there I am, Tampa. And they're like, I'm from New York.
Yeah.
I'm from New York.
Yeah, they don't.
Like, you know what I mean?
Right now.
And they find out you're not a Patriots fan or a Bruins fan. I'm like, he's in New York.
Yeah. Anywhere west of New Haven.
Yeah.
You're a New Yorker. Okay. Thanks a lot.
You can tell, too, coming down 95, the billboards. There's tune into WX, whatever it is, in, like, Boston.
Yeah.
And then 10 minutes south of that, closer to us, it's, like, WNBC.
Yeah.
The fan.
Good guy, Sean Hannity on CBS.
Yeah. It's like a Dixon line, right?
It really is.
Separate Boston, New York.
It really is. I mean, we got fans like Richmond Huntington, who's now, like, he's in New England.
He's a valid boy.
Yeah, he is a valid boy. He's a valid boy. So, all right, well, we got a lot to get to.
Is there a game this weekend?
I believe there's a game, Neil. There's a couple of quarterbacks out there this weekend. Now, let me just start by, I mentioned it last week, but I'm at a fever pitch with this freaking Super Bowl talk. This week, now you don't listen to Sports Talk Radio. God bless you. I wish I had that.
A little bit of Mike and Mike.
This radio, the week of Radio Row, where I have to listen to Mike Francesa today, talk to Dick Vermeil about his vineyard. 20 minutes. Well, did the bugs, do have insects bothering the grapes? I'm listening to WFAN, listening to insects bothering the grapes up in Sonoma.
That's what I get tired of when I listen to Tom Seaver. Maybe yeah. The greatest pitcher of all time. Yeah. Talk about his vineyard, and you get just exhausted.
But we must be in the minority because it's got to be a huge, why do they do it all?
Well, I mean, let's just get into this for a sec. You made the statement, I had to listen to,
yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. You don't have to.
What am I going to listen to?
Put on a Wu-Tang record, put on Led Zeppelin, put on Gary Clark Jr. We listen to that every show.
I don't think I have any CDs in my car. I don't have any.
You have other stations.
I'm not going to listen. There's no rock stations. 94.3 is the only semi-rock station.
I'm not out of
the 101.9 was a good rock station, and then the fan took that up. Now, Neil, where do you stand on this? Are you entertained at all by listening to, you know, Dick Vermeil's Vineyard or A.J. Hawk, Locks for Love or whatever? Any of that interest you at all?
Yeah, because I feel like the saturation – you're going to find a needle in a haystack. You know what I mean? You're going to come across that story that might not have been uncovered or just if you didn't have thousands of media outlets, you know, hovering around and swarming. So, I mean, it's a lot of noise. It's a lot of clutter. But I think if you can pick through the ash and the rubble, you'll find something cool.
Yeah, you know the one thing that I enjoy. Go ahead, Neil.
No, I mean, you just got to deal with a lot of the nonsense, you know? I mean, you got to deal with, you know, so-and-so's vineyard or whatever, but, you know, you every once in a while, I mean, it's nuts who they let in there to ask the questions. I mean, the one chick asked Peyton Manning about his favorite housewife from New York, and, you know, someone else asked just dumb questions. But, you know, I feel like it's a test, if you will. It's a test to see who can handle it and who can't. You know, are you going to let a media reporter or a journalist get under your skin over some stupid question? And, you know, who knows? I mean, that goes a long way in preparing for the Super Bowl. I know people think it's nonsense and it doesn't matter and that these guys are professionals, but say someone asks a question and it hits a nerve and it affects the guy's play. So, yeah, it's a part of the Super Bowl atmosphere, and I feel like the better team is able to handle it and able to push it aside. And that's what I fear for the Seahawks, to be honest, because a lot of, you know, the Broncos, I mean, most of the media attention goes to Peyton. But for the Seahawks, it seems like, you know, Richard Sherman is kind of basking in this media day frenzy. And then you have Beast Mode finally coming out and actually talking to the media, which he doesn't normally do. And now you're starting to see, like, maybe Media Day and all this attention is starting to get to the Seahawks, and they're going to get wrapped up in the hype and not focus on the game. That's my fear.
Well, I agree that could happen. And you see a little bit with it with Marshawn Lynch, where he's like, the only reason I'm here is because I'm fine if I'm not up here. He gave him 6 minutes of nothing and then walked off the stage. You know, to me, that's annoying.
That's what I wanted to bring up.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was the most entertaining thing to me from yesterday. I love that kind of stuff. I love that Eddie Murray, like Paul Coffey-ish, don't want to talk to them, don't care, because I just want to see guys play the game. I don't care what they talk about all week.
See, here's my problem with it, though. If you're – they get paid millions of dollars
right.
Because, and I'm not one of those fans, I don't, like I said, I hate listening to their thinking of canned answers, and then God forbid you give a non-canned answer like Richard Sherman, everybody hates them.
Yeah.
So it's a waste of time. But the bottom line is, that's what you get paid to do. Your job is not just to play football, it's to entertain and to give the fans these crazy access. And so that's what you sign up for. If you want to just play football for the love of the game, go play in some Long Island rec league. Somewhere. They're playing, they all call it semi-pro, so everybody gets paid. Everybody I know, oh, no, I played some semi-pro ball for West Haven.
Yeah,
Did you? I don't remember the name.
Go ahead.
So, I mean, so if you look for the love of the game, then go do that. It's part of the job. It's like any other – part of the job description is you have to do this.
No,
you can't just say I'm not doing it because I don't like it. There's a lot of things about every job in the world you don't like to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about
it is – it's part of the job, and it's part of the job.
I don't know what his reason is for not talking to me, and maybe you guys do, you follow the league more. I know with Eddie Murray, it was a perceived slight towards a fellow black ball player on his team that the media perpetuated out of Baltimore, so he didn't. Paul Coffey, same thing. Somebody slighted one of his teammates when he didn't want to talk to him anymore. I don't know what Lynch's deal is, and I agree with you that it is more than playing football.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, from the entertainment value of it,
right.
I don't get a kick out of listening to Peyton Manning or any of these players.
None of them.
Talk about the league.
Zero of them.
But I love the fact, the focus on this guy. He doesn't want to talk. And there he is with his glasses on. He's got the hood pulled up. He's just a tough dude. And he's just going like this. I'm just here to play ball, man. And the fact that he showed up made it even funnier to me. Like, and he's looking at it like, you know what, if you want to find me that 50 grand from last time and now make it 100 or whatever, then, you know,
so
we'll do a good cause. I mean, they give it to charity, right?
I think they do.
So I just get a kick out of that. My point is, though, that I don't care about anything. Like, if he sat down for an hour and talked, it would be less entertaining to me than him not talking.
Yeah.
Because that storyline, and listening to Ray Lewis last night talk about it, he's like, dude, it is what it is. I mean, what are you going
to
do?
There's only so much you could listen to about it, Neil. I know what you're saying, that maybe you'll catch the diamond in the rough somewhere and there'll be some sort of insight. But, I mean, the vast majority of these interviews are with former players or former coaches, and at the tail end of every interview, they're pitching something. They're all there pitching whatever they're pitching. And they're not giving anything. Maybe they'll tell one story. I mean, Otis Anderson was on Boomer Carton today. I mean, it didn't really add much to anything. It was like, I just couldn't wait for it to be over. I actually would rather have, we got the Nets playing good basketball. We got the Knicks actually, 3-3 on their home stand. We got, the Rangers playing some good hockey, playing outdoors tonight. Why do I want to hear the 40th person give their, breakdown of how this game's going to go? I'm just sick. I just want the game to happen. I wish you could just fast forward these 2 weeks. I can't stand it.
Yeah, but that's coming from a bunch of guys that aren't Seahawks fans, that aren't Broncos fans. And, I have a feeling that, I know when the Giants go to the Super Bowl, I am all over media day and the week leading up to it. Like, I can't get enough of it. And, I think the same might even go for division rivals or, like, fans of teams that hate the Seahawks and Broncos. You know, they want to see Marshawn Lynch mess up in an interview. They want to see Richard Sherman look like a jerk. So, I mean, you still got a contingency of football fans out there who the football fans are just football fans. They love anything and all everything football. Then you have the Seahawks and Broncos fans, and then you have the fans of the enemies. And so I still think you look at the Pro Bowl did like an 11 in the ratings. People can't get enough football, and that game is a joke.
No, I get that. Actually, that's a perspective I actually wanted to ask you about, Neil. Having never seen the Jets play in the Super Bowl, I always wonder what it would be like. I think it would be a much different experience than you with the Giants, because at least you've seen a bunch of them. It would be like this novelty thing. Maybe I would be into it. I don't know. If the Vikings made it to the Super Bowl, would you be more interested to hear these things, Danny?
Yeah, I can tell you this, that the food blocks around in the Final Four when Kansas has been there is like catnip to me. It really is.
Yeah.
I want to hear what they're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing about this week, the Seahawks are not a divisional rival of the Vikings, but I don't like Pete Carroll, and I'm not going to belabor that point. But
you hate him.
Yeah, but when he started talking yesterday, and it was the canned part of it, he talked 3 hours earlier, I don't care. Just heard it. You know what I mean? I know, I understand the point. There are fans that go, I hate Pete Carroll, or I hate Peyton Manning, so I'm going to listen. But I don't want that stress in my life, so I just heard it. But when it is Kansas, and I think for you and I, if it was the Jets or the Vikings, we would probably agree with Neil. Like, we would be all in on hearing, Geno Smith or, whoever the hell was playing for our team.
Can you just imagine Rex Ryan?
I like Rex, so I might listen. But I don't care about John Fox either way, and I hate people, so I don't care. But Rex, I get a kick out of.
Yeah.
So I would probably listen.
Do you get a kick out of Bill Belichick's stick?
No.
Has that gotten old? Did you ever get a kick out of it?
No.
Popovich is entertaining. I don't know why. I feel like a hypocrite because I hate to make Pop is entertaining.
Pop's entertaining. Here's the deal. Okay, Popovich is he's an Air Force Academy grad, a veteran of our armed forces, coaching maybe the best basketball team of the last 15, 18 years, a little mini dynasty down there. And he just has some cachet to him. Belichick's like a little weasel Wesleyan or something like that, and, he didn't play in the league or there's something about Belichick that I'm like, dude, if when it was Ditka, I love that stuff.
Yeah.
There's a Hall of Famer.
What about Torts?
Torts? Not even close.
No.
Torts to me is like Belichick. It's another guy who didn't play in the league, little weasel. At least Belichick doesn't come across like a tough guy.
No, he comes
the opposite. Yeah, but I get a kick out of the reaction the media has been. Like, Belichick didn't tell us anything again. It's like, well, what the hell did you
expect?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, he's going to have a cocktail in his hand and just open up.
Yeah.
Somebody will crack the case. Maybe we get Bill on our show. Neil will get him to open up. I don't know. But you know what? more so than the storyline of Media Row, I mentioned it last week briefly, but I started to write an article. I told you I was having problems with WordPress, so I just shut it down at this point. But, I mean, the storylines that have just been belabored to just death, like the, you know, Peyton's legacy is one thing. Every time you turn on any sports talk right now, they're talking about his legacy. What will this do? Will this make, and I've already told you that. If you're going to decide, having seen this guy play 300 games in his career, whatever it's been, playoffs and regular season, you're going to decide whether how great he is over this weekend's game, then, I can't argue with you. What's your opinion? And people want to talk about resumes, blah, blah, blah. But the weather aspect of this is so annoying. I mean, you go turn on ESPN, they probably right now have some guy standing outside Times Square with a little, like, thermometer standing out there. And then it harkens me back to the fact that we had the problem in Dallas a couple of years ago. We've had Super Bowls in Detroit. Now, granted, you're not going to have problems with it on the field, but I think all the fans want to see a game in somewhat, you know, questionable weather. You look at the game this year with Green Bay and San Francisco is one of the most entertaining games of the season, if not the last couple of years. So the fans want to see that. But the idea is, it screws everything up for the week. He's had Super Bowls in Atlanta, right? Atlanta shut down. Kids had to sleep in school because they got 2 inches of snow. So wouldn't you want to be at least in a northeast town that could handle it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been such a non-story, and they're still trying to make it a story. It's going to be like 38 degrees at kickoff.
I honestly hope that the weather is like a maelstrom. I hope it's just
somehow,
and I mean that,
something happens that's unforeseen.
Yeah, and in terms of Peyton, I just think that 2 Super Bowls on his resume will look infinitely better. And I think the good thing, if you're rooting for them, or just rooting to stop hearing the rhetoric, is if he wins the second one, we might not ever have to hear about it again.
Yeah,
a quarterback of his caliber winning his second Super Bowl.
And he could just shut up about it.
Yeah, it validates the first one.
Yeah.
If people need that. I still think he's one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen. I think most people would agree with that unless you're an idiot. But I do think it'll finally stop that nonsense of he's, like, the people that say Eli is better than him or...
People were debating that today on the show.
I mean, that's...
People were debating it today on Mike Francesa's show. He had multiple callers call in still wanting to debate that fact.
That's insane. It's mind-blowing.
But if he gets this ring, the debate's over. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. A part of me is rooting for it just so I could just stop hearing that stupidity. But at this point, I can't help rooting for the Seahawks for a couple of reasons. You know, I've been a Sherman guy since his fight with Revis, and Revis is still a Jet. And then you got the Derek Coleman story, which, you know, for personal reasons, I'm all wrapped up in.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's even a hugely impactful player, obviously. Like, fullback. And, you know, he probably won't even see much of him during the game. But to see that would be just, for me, it's hard for me not to root for the Seahawks at this point. And I don't hate Pete Carroll. I don't hate, you know, Coach Fox. I don't hate Pete. There's nobody on this team that on either team that I really despise.
I got a question for both of you as guys who are really in on the NFL. Breeze has what, 2 5,000-yard seasons now?
Yeah.
Is it 2?
I mean, he had 3. He's got back-to-back going now.
Why is there not the discussion about him, who's probably on his way to the Hall of Fame?
Walk into the Hall of Fame.
Why is there not the discussion about him only having 1 Super Bowl? And I know he's only been in 1.
Yeah.
But there's this discussion about Peyton. And again, I'm not a fan of Peyton. I don't dislike Peyton. He's just, to me, a great quarterback to watch. Why do you think there's so much focus on him? Is it because of the family, because of Eli, because of Archie? Is it because of all that? Or is it just he's a bigger-time guy than Bree? But why is there such focus on him? Having 1, and he needs a second, but I've never heard anybody say that about Drew Brees.
I'll just give a quick 20-second answer, and I'll let Neil answer. But I think the reason is, for whatever reason, Brees is not considered debatable with Tom Brady and Joe Montana for whatever reason. They think it's because of his system. They think, they always want to make excuses for that, and I'm always against the system. We talked about it in college football. You know, if the system is that good, then every team would run it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The fact that he runs it that way, but I just – he's in the discussion of the best quarterbacks of this era, but I still don't think he's in that discussion of is he a top 5 quarterback, is he the greatest of all time, whereas Manning is in that discussion. There are going to be people that are going to say this is the best quarterback that's ever played the game. I don't agree with it, but he's in that discussion. I have yet to hear somebody other than the most diehard Brees fan try to make that argument. What do you think, Neil?
Yeah, it's crazy how underrated – not underrated, I don't know if that's the appropriate word, but how underappreciated Drew Brees is. I mean, you look at his numbers, say 4,000-5,000-yard seasons, 4,000-yard seasons, which is nothing to sneeze at, especially in like 2006 when it wasn't like so standard. He's only had two seasons under 3,000 yards, and he's only led his team to a losing record twice in the past 9 years. I mean, it's nuts to me that he doesn't get, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, Peyton does so many endorsements and he puts his face out there on so many products. I think that has a little bit of something to do with it. The fact that he comes from the Manning family, which is so heralded, and Drew Brees is kind of just, he's an under-the-radar kind of guy. You know, he's head of the players union or something like that, so he's got a head on his shoulders, and he likes to speak out for what's right, but he's not the kind of guy that kind of sticks himself out there. I know he's in those crazy jeans commercials now, and NyQuil, but, you know, I just feel like for one reason or another, he just doesn't get his due, and it's really interesting and amazing that Dan brought it up, and I think that it should garner more attention because, you know, Drew's only been to one Super Bowl and he won, so
yeah,
I mean, maybe he's next in line, maybe after Peyton, like Brees is going to get the spotlight. I don't know.
Well, I mean, he's already 35, so I don't think if anything, even though he's not showing any decline, he had another fantastic season this year. But what's interesting is, you know, when Brady goes up against Manning, it's ESPN just they're canceling shows just to talk about that. They're just bumping part of the interruption just to do this, just to talk about this rivalry. And Brees doesn't have that. You know, if Brees is going up against Manning, it's not this crazy. I mean, who knows their record against each other? You know what I mean?
He beat him in that Super Bowl.
He beat
the Colts.
Yeah, right. But they are going to credit with Sean Payton's onside kick. So, but I just think, and I mean, I don't want to sound super anti-ESPN, like I'm trying to get on a soapbox here, but I think that ESPN creates these stories. We've talked about it a million times. Michael Jordan's 50th birthday, they made it sound like we had to stop what we were doing, take a couple days off of work to just celebrate this guy's 50th birthday. It means nothing.
Yeah.
It's not a 50th anniversary or something. It's 50th anniversary of this guy being born, and we had to just stop what we were doing to look for footage of him. And I think that they decided – they dictate what these stories are, just like everything else. So all of these storylines that we got to hear about, the Richard Sherman of the world, like they have to just every lead in and every see what he said next coming up after the break tonight on 11 o'clock Sports Center. See what they said, and then they have to have all the graphics. They just don't have the Breeze graphics ready yet. I don't think.
Unbelievable.
That's what frustrates
me. I mean, I just found an interesting thing and wanted to ask you guys about it because it's a deal where he is so elite. And Neil hit everything nail on the head, but it's just he's such an elite quarterback.
Love Neil. I'm over here breaking things down, and Neil nailed it right there.
No, but I mean,
just like push over everything I just said.
Yeah, he just added a little. Neil hit the nail on the head, though.
I just threw a little ketchup on the burger.
He's an ultra elite quarterback, Hall of Famer, all of us agree, and he gets nothing. I don't compare the two between sports, but in golf, there's this theory that a guy only has one. He has to validate that one by winning the second one. But I've always looked at it in team sports and go, it's a team sport.
Oh, exactly.
It's not Tiger didn't go out and play well.
Yeah, it's Federer can't beat Nadal.
Right. So I think Peyton has this one Super Bowl. What would Dan Marino or Dan Fouts give to have that one Super Bowl, or Fran Tarkenton, or any number of guys? So Peyton has that one. Drew Brees has that one. It's amazingly impressive to win one.
I know. I mean,
it's
so
difficult.
Until Sanchez gets one, he's never going to be in the conversation.
Him and Christian Palmer.
Until they get that threshold, then we'll be talking about any two. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll finish up our Super Bowl talk with the Tri-State Sports guys. We'll be right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minutes.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys, check us out as always, tri-statesportsguys.com, facebook.com/tri-statesportsguys, and on Twitter at tri-state_sports. Tony D, if you're listening at home, get well soon, buddy. God knows, he's on that cruise ship or something.
I don't know.
I mean, have you seen him in 2014? I haven't seen his face.
I don't think I have.
And you guys are close.
We're very close. I think I wish them a Happy New Year and a Merry Christmas left on the song.
Yeah.
So you know
there's
some time. It's
Seven Fishes on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, good Christmas and a nice New Year. So in February.
There you go. See you around Valentine's Day. All right, so let's wrap up the Super Bowl talk. I mean, I don't know if you want – well, you might as well give our predictions now. We don't have to save it to the end of the show because who knows where this world's going to finish. We might have an hour-long duty serious later on. Who knows?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got the number one defense – number one offense. Another point that's been belabored. I don't know if you've heard that.
The
number one ranked defense against number one ranked offense.
Was it 12-3 or 9-3? The number one defense in the Super Bowl is one of those two. I can't remember which.
Yeah. Hey, what's interesting to me that doesn't really get talked about is we're talking about this league being all about offense, and unless you have a big monster thing here. Hold on 1 second. Can you just take over for a second? Pull out the drawer. My God. It looks like a little shift. We got a live studio audience here, and Coach Sean Ireland's here, and he's having a very tough time finding a bottle opener. But he's all set now, so we're all good. But, it's supposed to be, defense is not, the whole critique about, Lovie Smith and Rex Ryan is, these are defensive-minded guys, and those kind of coaches don't win because defense doesn't win. People want to just talk about how dynamic Seattle's offense is, and I don't see it really being dynamic. They don't have a threat downfield. I mean, you can say what you want about Percy Harvin. I know your personal thoughts about the guy. He's going to be back in the Super Bowl, but, I mean, he might be good for one or two plays. Still not really a downfield, stretch-the-field type guy. More of a get-the-ball-in-his-hand and make plays after he gets the ball in his hands, in my opinion. So, and they've got beast mode, which is great, and they've got Russell Wilson, who's a smart, safe quarterback. But this is a defensive team. I mean, their offense is average. I don't know what their rankings are. I don't really care about the rankings. I'm talking, I probably name 10 offenses I would take over there. So it's going to come down to reality. Are all these experts right when they say the defensive-minded teams cannot win? You need to have this offensive component to them. You need to really be a balanced team. Or is it the team they're going to get blown out of the water here? I mean, what are your thoughts on that, this aspect of it? I mean, are the days of great defenses winning Super Bowls over?
I know this. I know that I've never seen the Vikings in a Super Bowl. They've been in four. And I know those Bud Grant teams, they were very much built like the Seahawks. They were all defense, minimalist offense. I mean, you have Trey Tarpon, you have some decent players, but those teams were all defense. They got in these Super Bowls and the AFL just beat the hell out of them.
Yeah.
And all that being said, I just think the idea of Richard Sherman being able to take away – they showed the other day they threw to his side, I feel like, 8% of the time this year.
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing. And as great as
that is,
whether they put him on, Demaryius Thomas or whatever they decide to do, I just think he's such a factor that if I was betting the game with the 2.5 points, I would take the points in the Seahawks, even with as much as the Broncos impressed me with their defense against New England in that game a mile high. That was extremely impressive with what they did in the run-stopping and the 10th best run-stopping defense in the league. I would load up this week on the Seahawks. I mean, as much as I dislike Pete Carroll, he's a very good defensive mind. You give him 2 weeks to prepare for the Broncos with one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, a great offense, great receivers. He's got no Sean Marino with 1,500 total yards, all that stuff I saw. I would just say I got to take that defense. I would take the Seahawks in 2.5, and I think they're going to win, even though I'll be rooting for Denver like they were the Vikings.
Well, what's interesting about Sherman is you talked about, whatever that percentage is, they throw to him, it's under 10% or up to his side of the field. He is not a guy who mirrors their number one wide receiver. He's stuck on the left-hand side all the time.
Yep.
And so, whether maybe they change it, I can't imagine you go to the Super Bowl and now you change that up. But maybe they wait for, you're going to have to throw some wrinkles at Peyton Manning because if he knows that factor, he might just say, fine, we'll just I'll bring, you know, Mayor Thomas in motion over here. I'll just use the middle of the field all day. I mean, it's not just Richard Sherman and their secondary. The whole unit is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But you wonder if there's going to be some cat and mouse there where maybe Pete Carroll switches it up and says, you know what I mean, just to throw a wrinkle at Peyton Manning. I mentioned before that I'm in my heart of hearts, I'm rooting for Seattle, but I think Denver wins and covers this game. I think it's a touchdown game. I actually think that, you know, both teams are going to put up more points than people think. I don't know. I'll look up the over-under while Neil's giving his pick. But I think it's going to be a higher scoring game than people think. It's going to, the weather's going to be fine. You know, I have a feeling that this is going to be, you know, an exciting game at halftime with the score, points being scored, and then all the way throughout the game. But I have a feeling that at the end of the day, it's going to be a touchdown victory for Denver. Where are you looking here, Neil?
Well, I've been going back and forth on this for just about 2 weeks now, and I flip a coin at this point. I mean, I've gone back and forth so many times on who's going to win this game. It's just, it's mind-boggling. But, you know, I think one of the things that people aren't paying attention to, you know, everyone keeps emphasizing the number one defense against the number one offense, but take a look at the flip side of the ball. You know, what is Russell Wilson going to bring to the table? You know, obviously the Seahawks are going to rely on Marshawn Lynch to pick up 3 to 4 chunks of yards per carry. So you know Denver's going to key on Marshawn. Are Seattle's receivers going to step up and make big plays? They made big plays last week against San Francisco. They made a couple big plays against New Orleans. And they don't get the kind of credit that they deserve. Very underrated wide receiving squad. You know, Harvin, I guess, is going to come back. I don't know how much of a factor he'll be. You know, he's been injury prone. So, I mean, the first hit he takes, he'll probably leave the field. But, you know, how is Russell Wilson going to respond to the pressure? And, you know, can he up his game? And my gut says that he's going to play probably the best game of his career. You know, he has this facade, this mentality, this look about him like nothing can faze him. I mean, you look at the NFC Championship game. First play, he fumbles and they lose the ball. You think, oh my God, this is, you know, game over. There's no way, he's too rattled. And then he comes back and he leads them to victory. So I think you can't underplay, you can't discount the other side of the ball and the flip side of the ball. I don't know. You know, Denver's defense showed me a lot in the New England game. You know, I thought that New England was going to come in and just pound the ball. And if not, at least utilize the run for play action, because Denver would be keying on Blunt and the rest of the team. But, I mean, they stepped up, that defensive line stepped up big time. And, you know, I have a feeling that, you know, Beast Mode is going to have some trouble, you know, breaking anything. He might have one long run, but he's not. I don't see him cracking 100 yards in this game. He might get a short touchdown. So it's going to rely on Russell Wilson in the passing game, and I think that those receivers are going to step up against that secondary, which is already banged up. I think they're missing one of their starting corners and one of their starting safeties. When you look at the Seattle D versus Denver O, you know, Peyton hasn't really faced tough defenses this postseason. I don't think San Diego's defense is that great. I think they played above their heads. And we all know the story with New England's defense. They bend, but they don't break, and eventually they ended up breaking against Denver. I think, you know, despite what people say about, you know, Seattle being a much better team at home because of the 12th man, I think that, you know, MetLife Stadium can get loud. And I think there's going to be a strong contingency of Seahawks fans there, but they can't rely on that now. And so it'll be interesting to see how they play away from, you know, Seattle, and whether or not they can play at the same intensity. I mean, it's the Super Bowl, so I don't see why they can't. Peyton, probably not going to throw for 300 yards. Might have a touchdown or two. I think you're going to see, like you said, Knowshon Moreno is going to step up. Monty Ball stepped up in the AFC Championship game. He was pretty much absentee all year. Then all of a sudden he gets worked into the mix. And, you know, feel like Denver has a lot of weapons, but they're matched. You know, I mean, Seattle's got guys to match up with them. So, you know, you look at Thomas and Decker, two of the bigger guys. Well, Seattle's got bigger guys to defend. So is it going to be come down to a guy, a short guy, a quick guy, Wes Walker, who's been laced with concussions throughout the season, who's kind of underperformed a little bit? Is he going to redeem himself from the drop that he had against the Giants, which I think would be a huge storyline? So all that said, a long-winded way of saying, I think I got to go with the Seahawks on this one. Even though Madden 25, they ran a simulation and the Broncos won in overtime, and usually the Madden simulation, I think they're like 8-2 or 9-2 in their predictions. I got to go with Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same as you. I was going back and forth for a while on this, and I was trying to, like, you know, get my who I was rooting for out of my pick. I agree with you. I think to me, the guy to watch in this game, and you talk about legacies and stuff, it's not that this guy's going to be like, you know, is being compared to an all-time great, but where he's being compared to his peers right now, Demaryius Thomas, people want to put him in the top five or even higher wide receivers in the league. And, you know, he has all those attributes. He's a big guy. He's fast. You know, people want to compare him to Megatron even, like that type of guy. I don't see that he's there yet. I don't, you know, I'm not saying he's a complete product of Peyton Manning, but I'm not willing to put him in there with, you know, A.J. Green and Julio Jones yet, but he could be. You know, I think this will be his time to shine here. He's going to go against a legitimate secondary, and, you know, there's going to be times when he's matched up with Sherman, and if he's not, he's still going to be matched up with somebody very good. So you're going to have to see whether it's going to be one of the, you know, the DC games where he goes off for 140 yards, 6-7 catches. You know, I think that they're going to need to – I don't know that they're going to have sustained drives. Typical Manning, like, you know, just think down the field, you know, go 8 of 9 on a drive and score. I think that they're going to need to hit a couple home runs here because I think that the you know, they're sure tacklers on Seattle side of the ball. So it's not like they're going to have a lot of yards after the catch, I don't think. And I think that they're going to need some big plays out of Decker and Demaryius Thomas down the field when they're man-on-man coverage is one of these good corners. And it'll be – I mean, it's as, you know, interesting as a Super Bowl as you could really hope for. And I know a lot of times the one seeds don't match up in the world in the Super Bowl. All that, you know, you look at just track record-wise, it doesn't happen that often. This is a time when everybody wanted to see it. I mean, I know a lot of people before the season wanted to see the Niners. But Seattle was the better team, was the best team in the NFC all year, I believe. And, you know, these are the two best teams, the best team in each conference playing each other. I think it's going to be great. And I think, you know, as this game comes up closer, I think right now that the spread's at 2.5. It's anywhere between 2-3. And the over-under is pretty consistently sitting at 47. I think that's a good over-under. You know what I mean? I think it's going to be somewhere around that. I could see. I mean, if you were to ask me a score, I'd probably say 27-20.
They usually are right around that when it comes to Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think that this is going to be that type of game where you're going to be into it the whole game. It's not going to be one of those blowouts you used to see in the 90s all the time. I think this is going to be a good game. Exciting to watch. And, you know, part of me is going to be like, I'm going to be rooting for Denver because I picked them here on the show. I'll probably throw a few bucks on them. But it's going to be one of those games that's very rare where you don't really have a rooting interest. You do because you hate Pete Carroll. Normally, there's one team in the fight that you're like, you hate it. And I was matched up twice in the last 7 years where I got to root against you. It's either, you know, the Giants or the Patriots, which is just the disaster situation for me. But normally, there's one team that you just can't stand. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just think on another topic, that there was a couple passes, and I'm not an expert, but a couple passes Manning threw in that Patriots game that looked like he was like skeet shooting or something, that one that stuck between the two Patriots defenders and stuff, and I don't see those passes getting through.
They say he throws the most accurate duck in the world of all time.
A couple of those.
They didn't see my film from high school.
Yeah, no, they
might be some accurate duck.
I'm just saying, you talked about them making it down the field, and we all see that up-tempo, 28 audibles, and the Omahas and everything that he does. I don't know how much success you could have trying to dink it down the field against Seattle.
Yeah.
I just think they have enough playmakers, in you know, in my mind, to stop you from doing that. I mean, eventually, if you need 5 first downs to score against Seattle or 6,
Yeah.
How many times can you go score?
And I think New England, I think they were something like they only had three pressures on 40-something dropbacks on Manning. But that's not going to happen. They're going to get pressure on.
Pressure on Brady, but I think a guy like Wilson can get outside that pocket. And they threw a couple of slant passes, which were just perfect in that San Francisco game.
Yeah.
And I just think that, you know, he could have some difficulty with that, trying to nudge the ball down the field against the Seattle defense when they have all those guys that can turn you over.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be totally right, and none of us know. They could win by 30, but I just think you take the defense in a game like this. And you were saying before, everybody knocks. You can't win as a defensive coach. And then you see their record, and the top defenses, they're like 9-3 or 12 or whatever it was that I saw. And you go, well, how could you say a guy like Rex Ryan or Lovie Smith can't win a Super Bowl when the top defenses – have an unbelievable amount of success.
The Giants' first Super Bowl was predicated upon that front four and getting. I mean, that's what won them that game. You know, you look at the plays that Eli made, and you know, obviously Tyree, and then the game winner to Plaxico. But it was all about their defense.
Yep.
It wasn't that long ago. The game hasn't changed that much until 7. You know,
they just use whatever angle suits their point.
Yeah,
which is frustrating because this is clearly best defense we've seen maybe in a while, and everybody's going like this. Look at the record of the top defenses, and on the other hand, they go, but defenses don't win.
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about? You just told me they win.
They got time to fill, dude.
Yeah, they told me. You know what I mean? I didn't tell them that stat. Everybody was throwing it in my face.
Yeah.
So all I'm doing is regurgitating it. I can't even remember what it was. I just know it was 3 losses in, like, 12 or 15 attempts. So,
yeah.
You know, we'll see.
All right, we'll see. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll spend the last hour and 20 minutes on the Brooklyn Nets.
Yep.
Be right back with a Tri-State Sports Show.
These days, my dollar just doesn't go as far. In my car, it gets me about 6 miles. On my cell phone, maybe 4 minutes. But at McDonald's, my dollar gets me through the entire day. From sausage McMuffin with egg for breakfast to a tasty double cheeseburger. Thanks to McDonald's Dollar Menu, my dollar gets me right where I want to be. Satisfied.
Because we're talking about Neil, and we were going to drop it on you here. Well, you know, we joked around about it. We didn't have much show prep here. We don't have either of our producers. Without them, we got nothing. We're just kind of, Dan showed up in the studio, and we're like, what do you want to talk about? I don't know. What do you want to talk about? I didn't even talk to you, Neil, since last week. So who knows what's going on? But so we got Coach Ireland in the studio. I said to him during the break, I said, why don't you come up with some debate? Something that the three of us could give a 1 minute rant on. We don't know what it's going to be. We talked about we'd like this at some point to be like, you know, callers to call in and do this. But give us some sort of debate. We'll talk about it, and we'll give us our, we'll give our opinion on it. So he's going to come up with something. He just said, well, what you guys talk about, playing all the Super Bowls in a nice weather town. And I said, well, we kind of did briefly talk about that anyway. So he's going to come up with something. Doesn't have to be Super Bowl related. In the meantime, the number to call, as always, if you do want to reach us, 347-637-2306 is the Tucci Lumber Hotline. We do have a couple callers on hold. We're about to line number 2. You are on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this? You're on the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this? All right. We got a line 2 is not with us. But let's talk a little. Can we talk a little about the Brooklyn Nets? I've been begging to talk about the Brooklyn Nets for 3 weeks, and every time you cut me off.
Well, let's just let you know I'm not doing good. Go on a blanket. You can lay down and you can talk about it.
Well, let me ask you this: how much of the Brooklyn Nets? How many minutes of Brooklyn Nets basketball have you seen this year? I know you wrote that article, so you did watch one game.
Yeah. I probably watched them play about 4 games.
So for games, Neil, you watch any Brooklyn Nets this year?
Nah.
There you go. Well, then I'll just take the mic here. I'll go off the fella on you guys.
Yeah.
Because, I've been critical of Jason Kidd from the hiring, thinking like, you know, the idea that just because you're a good pro means you could just step in and become a head coach, the NBA level, to me is insane. You guys, anybody that even has just coached high school, just knowing like in-game situations, there's no way to prepare for it unless you've done it. And we talked about it when we did the play-by-play of that Thanksgiving game. How many millions of games have you watched in your life? You're like, I could do that. So you're doing it. You're like, wow.
you know, I bet you the second time would be much better and third time, whatever. But, you know, and Van Gundy, I mentioned, I think I said it last week, that, you know, his first game was like at a Division II school or whatever, he was like 24 years old, and he called a timeout when they had no timeouts left, cost his team the game, and he's like, you know, I prepared for these games like I was an NBA coach back then, but in-game situations, and I think that you've seen that in Jason Kidd, and the fact that the way he uses rotations, the way he just like, he almost feels like he has to get guys in all the time, and then he falls in love with Allen Anderson, and that guy plays 40 minutes a game, and but I think he's starting to get his feet under him. I think that the most recent Darren Williams injury kind of helped him, because you got to see what Sean Livingston was. And, you know, this is the guy who came out of high school with all this hype and was good and then had that horrific leg injury, battled his way back. You didn't know what you were going to get out of him, but what you got out of him is a great on-ball defender. Not good, great. I mean, I don't know how much if you've watched enough of him to know that – I mean, this guy could lock down a point guard, two guard, anybody in the league. And so I honestly thought that there was a possibility of them starting Darren Williams, Sean Livingston at the same time like the Knicks did last year, you know, with Kidd and Felton. Kid and Prigioni, and where, you know, when they were going to two starting point guards. And so I thought they could do that. But what Jason Kidd has done is actually bring Darren Williams off the bench. And I think it's helped them. And, you know, the same way when they did that for a little while with Paul Pierce, having him come off the bench, I think that it just gave him that little bit of spark. And I think that having Andre Kirilenko back, he's the type of guy, and I texted you, I'm going to buy you a Kirilenko jersey, and that's happening, because he plays the kind of basketball I think that Dan Santarelli would play. He's one of those guys, not, I mean, obviously they're different type of players, but like a Tyson Chandler, in that, like, when you need a loose ball, somebody to come down with it, it's always Andre Kirilenko. You need just a, you know, a tip, like, to keep a play alive and get an offensive rebound, you know, to direct to somebody else. It's Andre Kirilenko. You need a guy to knock down a shot or make a big pass. So you look at his stat line, and for the fantasy geeks out there, they're like, oh, he's not doing anything. He's averaging 6 points or whatever he's doing. But he that's exactly what they were lacking, and that's why – when they were going through their problems, they would have that disastrous quarter where they were just looking for somebody. And I thought Garnett or Pierce were going to be that person, and neither of them really were during that downtime that they had, and Pierce was hurt for a little while. I think they needed that type of guy that could just make that one play that could just turn the momentum back. And that's why you're not seeing them, although they lost that awful game because of Darren Williams, the night against Toronto.
Such a brutal inbound pass. And that's something that you taught at like 6, 7 years old. You never just throw willy-nilly fast towards the defensive hoop. You just never do it.
I mean, I was so frustrated. I started to write an article, and I just couldn't. So I was so mad. I didn't want to pretend like I, you know all the X's and O's about basketball. But to me, that's a very basic thing. There was, what, 10 seconds left in the game?
Yeah,
and they didn't have any timeout, so you had to inbound it. But if anything, you don't want to make that pass, especially – you know, where there was only, you know, the 5 second clock is down to 1.5 seconds. So he has to just throw it up. And God bless, you know, Toronto, they just started breaking towards the backcourt. And then, you know, obviously steal the inbound and knock down the jumper. And that was the second turnover in the final minute of the game. It's a terrible turnover.
Yeah.
This is your superstar point guard.
He's always been a guy who kind of amazes me. Ever since I saw him at Illinois when they had that great backcourt, him and D. Brown, he ended up getting drafted by Utah. They signed the D. Brown as a free agent. And to talk about Kirilenko, he was in Utah, and Jerry Sloan, who I've always admired, loved him. He loved him because of those stat lines you get from him, which would be in those days like 12 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks, and 2 steals. Like these silly, stupid,
yeah,
across-the-board stat lines. He was never like a 30-point,
yeah,
15-rebound kind of guy, but you just get solid, never-stop hustle.
Yeah. He's an anti-J.R. Smith.
And then a lot of people believe Darren Williams basically chased Jerry Sloan out of Utah with his silly, stupid demands that he had about certain things and wanting to run a different system, that this was the same system John Stockton ran,
yeah,
and was fine with it,
yeah,
that Darren Williams had some kind of beef about it or whatever. But Williams, to me, and I don't know how to quite quantify it, he's no Chris Paul. He's not that elite Derrick Rose type player. He's just not. But people are constantly trying to tell me how good this dude is.
Yeah, since they got him.
Yeah, and I've never, and I'm not saying he's not a good pro. I'm not saying he's not a very good point guard in that league. But when people start putting him in that kind of lofty, you know, tier of player, to me it's ridiculous, and I don't see it. Now seeing him more frequently, not that much this year with Brooklyn, it's just I don't see it.
I haven't seen it. I was so excited when they got him.
Yeah.
And within a year, I started turning on him. You know, I knew all the things that you were talking about, you know, getting Jerry Sloan fired and all that. And you start to think, well, you know, whatever, Michael Jordan got coaches fired, not to the caliber of Jerry Sloan, obviously. Yeah. But then when there was all those trade rumors, I was like, trade him. Trade him. I don't care. Trade that guy because you can get a ton for him. It's almost the same way I think that the Knicks should trade Carmelo Anthony at this point. Because they, you know.
You can't win with him. We've had this discussion.
He's fantastic. The guy can score at will. But you can't. Eventually, basketball is one of those sports where you can start looking at playoff success and the rest because you got five guys and a guy can take over a game a lot more than you can in football or baseball. And I think that he's a guy, you can get a ton for him. You can then take that money and spend it on other things. And, you know, I think Knicks fans just still love him to death. When he dropped 62 the other day, they loved it. I'm like, okay, keep loving him and, you know, not doing anything.
The best basketball locally that we've seen professionally was that insanity period. And not just because of the, uniqueness of Jeremy Lin coming to the league out of nowhere at Harvard and, you know, cut by the Rockets and all this crap. That was team basketball for 3 or 4 weeks, whatever it was, and you had no Melo and no Amar'e Stoudemire.
Yeah.
And that team has never looked better, and the Garden hasn't sounded like that since the Knicks were in the finals and the Rangers were in the Stanley Cup. Like, that's how amazing it was.
Yeah.
They come back, and the stat I saw last year was the record of the Nuggets since they got rid of him versus the Knicks since they got him. And the Nuggets are like 7 or 8 games ahead of them. Since that Chandler trade and Mozgov, they got all those pieces for Carmelo. They've been better than the Knicks.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah, I know. And I've been following that.
It's staggering. I mean,
and Gallagher's been hurt like the whole time.
I know.
If he was healthy.
You take Stoudemire and Melo. Now, Stoudemire is in a street suit, you know, street clothes more than he's playing. Chandler's constantly in and out of the lineup. You have the bumbling J.R. Smith, when I said since the beginning, they never should have resigned him after they went and drafted Hardaway. And they already had him on Shumpert. I mean, how many of those same kinds of players can you have on one roster? And now you have Melo, and you're right. You could get a king's ransom for this guy.
Yeah.
And this is an organization that I don't know what Dolan and his minions think, but they're not going to win anything as long as Miami and Indiana are in that conference. If and when the Bulls get a guy like Rose back, what are they going to do?
Yeah, right.
Who are they going to beat? They probably couldn't beat the Brooklyn Nets in the series right now.
Oh, no chance.
You know what I'm saying? So what is the point of holding on to Melo?
Yeah, because where are you going to add – what are you going to add at some point? They keep talking about this marriage between him and Chris Paul. And then on the flip side, a team that I think that you would love, and I know you don't watch this like random NBA, the team you would love this year, the Phoenix Suns. You follow the Phoenix Suns at all? I mean, they were a team picked to finish like nothing.
No.
They got the Morris brothers. They got the Eric Bledsoe. They got Goran Dragic, who's very good. But they were not picked to do anything in the West. This team is like 26-20 or 26-18, something like that. John Havlicek's the coach.
Is he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, my God. This team, because you like traditional basketball, this is a team where somebody's different every night. They got the good point guard, distributes the ball. They got the Morris brothers, like you said. You would love – you should jump on board with the Phoenix Suns this year. They are a team. You like real basketball.
I'm embarrassed that I didn't know John Havlicek's coaching.
Oh, yeah. Neil, you follow the Phoenix Suns this year at all?
Diehard fan.
Diehard, always, since the Barkley days. I mean,
I was hoping that Marley would come rise from the dead and hit a J in someone's eye.
The Magic Man. I mean, they are a team that you would like to follow. I'm telling you that right now.
I don't doubt it, and I'm going to just tell you briefly my problem with the NBA. You and I were texting the other night, but it's such a players' league. And I love college basketball because, first of all, I think with the NBA, if they would just extend the shot clock to 30 seconds, give teams opportunities, because you don't have any teams in that league like when you see Syracuse, or here's a 2-3 zone, or West Virginia or Michigan comes in, you listen to a team that plays 1-3-1. Pro basketball is like, let me guess what I'm going to see tonight. It's going to be pass the ball to the wing, enter to the post, guys respot the three-pointers.
Yeah.
That's all it is, and I find it so boring. But when I watch San Antonio, or Indiana, or even Miami,
yeah,
play that. I mean, they all have superstar players, but you go, look how they share it.
Yeah.
Look how they pass, and they cut, and they screen for each other.
Yeah.
But when you watch locally, the Knicks, which is what I watch more of, shamefully, I should probably watch the Knicks more now, I can't take it.
Yeah.
I can't sit through it. The other night I
the
watched
The Nets are becoming more of that.
Yeah, because Poletovic had that great first half, and yeah. Melo had 37 at the half. And I was like, the one night I watched on a Friday night, which is when I typically watch NBA if the Islanders aren't playing, I go, amazing first half.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
But there was a lot of good basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of it to me is just garbage.
Yeah.
So now
yeah,
I'm trying to watch.
I thought the Nets would be more of that type of team because
yeah.
they have a point guard. And then, like I said about the Suns, you know, you got Hornacek out there who's run the point and knows what's going on. I think they kind of, like, you know, rolled over, you know.
Wait, who's called? Jeff Hornacek?
Jeff Hornacek, yeah.
Not John Havlicek.
Oh, that's John Havlicek.
That's why I thought.
Oh, that's
Jeff.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so you were like, so John.
Yeah.
I'm like, I didn't know you were such a big Jeff Hornacek.
No, all right. Okay.
Jeff Hornacek. But obviously
yeah.
you remember Jeff Hornacek.
Absolutely.
And,
Iowa State.
Yeah, I would have never known where he went to. Yeah, so I apologize. So yeah, so he, you know, was one of those players, a heady player, and it's kind of rolled over into that. I thought Jason Kidd would be that. Maybe he will be. It's just to me, when you're in a win now situation, you don't go out and add a guy, a first year coach. He's never even been an assistant coach at any level. Kind of, and I don't know what Hornacek's past being head coach was. To be honest with you, I have no idea if he was. He must have been an assistant at some point because he's been out of the league for 8-10 years, right?
All of that.
But so he's probably been assisted somewhere. But, you know, those are one of those stories that if you're just a pure basketball fan like you, like a college guy, you should be kind of, like, gravitating towards your son. But I don't know why I'm on this big son.
When did you get to see him? I know they were in New York not that long ago.
You
know, Baltimore, but
you see him. I'll tell you, there's a lot of NBA games just on. Like, I'll, you know, TNT's, you know, the cover games, the NBA TV. I don't know if you get that at home, but there's always games. So it's games out. So I've seen maybe, like, I don't know, 4 or 5. Suns games, bits and pieces of them, but I've been following them, and you watch them, and you're like, how the hell do they do with it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so it's entertaining, but as far as the Brooklyn Nets go, I mean, everybody had written them off. Obviously, they could have pulled within a half a game of first place the other night, and then they blow that game against Toronto, and they've lost 2 to Toronto in the last, whatever, the last 2 losses from Toronto, but I honestly think that they're poised to slide up to the 3 seed. I mean, they're only about 2.5 games out of the 3 seed right now. You get into the 3 seed, you get in these playoffs, and I know, look, Indiana and Miami are light years ahead of the Nets, but anything could happen in the playoffs. If LeBron James goes down for the Heat, they become a decent team at best without LeBron James. The Pacers are a little bit different because they're so deep. I mean, they got, you know, their 8-deep rotation is better than
– look what they did last year without Danny Green.
Yeah. Well, Danny Green's going off their bench now. Like, he didn't play for the first however many months. They're like, oh, we just have Lance Stephenson. He'll just drop 25 a game. It doesn't matter. So, I mean, and then, you know, they got the big center. And I don't think they can compete with the Pacers. You never know. Maybe another team knocks them off. But you never know what happens. You know what I'm saying? So you get into the 3 seed, and you're like, well, what's the ceiling for the Nets? It's not crazy to think that one of those teams gets knocked off or you have an injury to a big guy. I don't know who the injury would be in Indiana. I mean, you could talk about Paul George as their superstar. You could talk about the fact that they have probably playing better than any other center in the league in Roy Hibbert, like overall, offensively and defensively. Maybe if he went down, you know, that would kind of equalize some things. But I think it's exciting. Let them be the 3 seed. Let them get into the second round of the playoffs. And, I mean, I'm a Mets, just a Mets fan. I'm not sitting here saying it's championship or bust. Let me get an exciting second round series, and I'm ecstatic as a Mets fan.
I think that's I don't want to say it's the ceiling, but I think if you got the Nets into the second round of the playoffs, and we talked about this either last week or the week before that, there's no doubt they can do damage to someone because of all the veterans they have. They have good parts, and they're doing all of it right now without Brook Lopez.
Yeah. So
I know who is their go-to inside player.
Who's averaging 26.
It's extremely impressive what they're doing. And
yeah.
Really, we talked about it, but there's no reason to really be surprised other than Jason Kidd as the coach because they have all the parts.
Yeah.
They really do. I mean, we haven't even talked about Joe Johnson.
Who just hit more games than anybody
so
in the league in the last few years.
You've got to be, I don't want to say terrified, you got to have a little bit of trepidation if you're Indiana or Miami, calling them in the second round, even if they're completely healthy. I don't think they'd be.
There's no other
Miami
team you'd be
sure.
scared of.
No,
I
the rest of the Eastern Conference is such garbage.
It's horrible.
That you have those two teams.
The Knicks are 3 games out. It's 2.5 games out.
You have Indiana and Miami, and then everyone else is crap unless the Nets step up and do something.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I think people will be scared because, God forbid, Darren Williams does put together a few good games and has the talent that everybody claims he has.
And you have all the experience in the world with guys like Garnett here.
Who's
the effort you're going to get from Kirilenko. You have Joe Johnson. You've got good pieces coming off the bench, Paletovic and all that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's
Plumlee's actually playing pretty well.
the best.
Chicken,
yeah, got it. But he played. I mean, I would have never. I would have. He's one of those guys. I mean, they drafted Josh Boone a few years ago. I'm excited. He was a terrible player. And I'm like, you know what? Fine. Then you have to make the ball. He'll be a bum too. Yeah. Forget about it. But he's actually pretty good. In the minute that he gets, he plays pretty well defensively. Yeah. He'll get his rebounds. He gets his points in the game.
Who's his brother football? Does he play for Indiana?
Is it Miles Plumlee?
Miles.
I don't know. Neil, you know where Miles Plumlee plays?
Miles Plumlee was Duke, wasn't he?
Well, yeah. We got that. And there's another Plumlee brother playing for Duke now, right?
Right now, yeah. I think they might have like 12 more.
They're all 7
yeah.
feet tall.
The one on Duke right now, though.
You know who Miles Plumlee plays for?
Who?
The Phoenix Suns.
Does he really?
Yeah, I just looked it up. But you know what? The only reason I'm very glad that we talked to the Nets and we're rounding up now
yeah.
is just the look on your face when I said Don Havlicek, and I meant to say Jeff Hornacek, your look, I was like, I'm a huge Jeff Hornacek
yeah.
fan. I didn't know that about you.
I got to tell you.
You were so excited about it, and I was like,
Don Havlicek was my father's favorite player and my great uncle's favorite player.
He just, you thought maybe he just snuck into the league.
Yeah, dude, I was like, he would never leave the Celtics. He would never not be involved with the Celtics. Let alone he's like a couple years older than my dad.
Yeah,
like he's a rookie coach, like 71. You know what I mean?
The look on
yeah.
your face, and then when I said later on, Jeff Hornacek,
yeah.
he was so angry.
I was.
He was so dejected.
Well, Jeff Hornacek, again, I always say guy played a long time with Phoenix. Very good player. But Josh Havlicek.
Slightly better than Jeff Hornacek.
Maybe one of the top 10, 15 best all-around basketball players ever to play. I'm like, how did Hobby just end up with Phoenix?
Well, that would make
no sense.
He's hung up in the Southwest. He's just putting together a solid team.
Yeah.
Top to bottom. All right. Well, you know what we're going to talk about when we come back?
Hockey.
Back-to-back week to hockey. Maybe we should sneak duty series in between there.
What's
up? To just kind of like...
I can't wait to find out what weird food Neil has encountered this week.
I know. And what yeah. He
yeah.
always has that one question. Like, I'll ask you this. What
yeah.
kind of animal would you find?
Yeah. He's going to have like a peanut butter vodka.
It's going to be something. When we come back, Duty to You Serious with the great Neil Lynch. We'll be back in about a minute and a half. With the hamburger.
Hamblor, the god of hamburgers, set out to create the ultimate burger with all the flavors of a steakhouse. 100% black Angus beef, crispy onion strings, A1 steak sauce, and crumbled blue cheese. It was glorious. The new Steakhouse $6 Burger from Carl's Jr.
Tastes like it's made by the god of hamburgers, and that's just the way it is.
Now, Dan, you know I'm not a guy who likes to toot my own horn. That's not my thing.
No, not at all.
Never. But for a guy who's a third-string producer on the show,
yeah.
I've been asked over this past month to really step up. And the production value has been pretty good. I mean, coming back with different little songs, Neil. I mean, we're shaking our shoulders over here, Neil, in the Perry Ave studio. Right?
The show when you get off the ground out of here by myself. I don't know what button to hit.
It would be like in Wayne's World when Wayne walks up his set and Garth is just like, I'm not supposed to be here.
That would be me, really. Yep.
All right, Neil, what do you got for us on Dave this week? This is a Super Bowl spectacular. I mean, this is a show heard around the world. Radio Row can do whatever they want to do with themselves. We got the Tri-State Sports guys, week of the Super Bowl. People have been waiting for a full hour to get into your Duty, You Serious. That's the only reason we got the live studio audience here. So give us something good. Kick us off with something that'll get me and Danny, you know, get our blood going.
All right. Well, I was debating on whether or not to speak upon this subject, this topic, or this story, because it's not technically sports related. But I every time I see the headline, I can't stop thinking about it. And it's the story of an opera singer who had surgery and now farting, and now I believe she lost her job.
I think that Neil needs to sneak one fake story in here? Maybe we have to try to guess the fake story. Because every like that can't be a true story.
I saw the girl one time who couldn't stop hiccuping.
Yeah, she made the tour. She made the rounds around like she's on Ellen and Mari. This poor girl had a career.
Oh my God.
She was an opera singer. And so this woman had some gastrointestinal issues, Neil?
She's an opera singer named Amy Herbst. With the she performed the Nashville Opera Company, and she claims that a nurse slash midwife at some hospital in Kentucky performed an episiotomy. I don't know, during labor without her consent, and so. She's now seeking $2.5 million compensation for negligence, for pain, suffering, blah, 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 because she now suffers from chronic flatulence, and she lost her job because of it, apparently. So, I don't mean it's like one of those things where I don't mean to toot my own horn, but this woman can't stop tooting her own horn.
I would... potentially guess that could be some kind of disability, right? If you can't stop passing gas, so I would just sue this opera house for, you know.
The opera house?
Isn't she an opera singer?
Yeah, what do you get to the opera house?
They fired her.
Oh, I get you. Yeah, I guess you're right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's...
No, you're going... I mean, first of all, just the idea that you... Because you guys don't have kids. You don't know what a episiotomy is. I don't even want to get into this. The details of the episiotomy, it's pretty common. It's basically when the baby is too big to pass through, they have to make a cut in a certain area of the woman's body to allow the shoulders to get through, Neil. So I mean, you wouldn't know that, but having gone through...
That was upsetting, just hearing that.
Yeah, right, and he couldn't even say it. It's not he's not like the doctor from, what's the show with Tina Fey? And the guy's like, I don't really know how to say this. Diabetes?
Dirty Rock.
Yeah. And he couldn't say that.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Leo's
it's an episiotomy. It's a pretty common. It is pretty common. So this woman, they couldn't authorize it, but I think that's one of those things. It's like a C-section. I mean, that's like it's the health of the mother and the baby. I don't know how you could sue the hospital. I mean,
I'm more concerned about the wrongful termination.
I like that about you.
I mean, really, she can't stop breaking wind.
But what do they do? They just keep. What is she going to do? The curtain?
Well, they fire her because she's farting too much.
But what are they going to? What role could they use her in?
I don't know, but, keep a microphone away from her backside.
And you're like, put the timpani right behind her.
You got to get the South Park guys involved with this shit.
Oh, I guarantee you, they're doing a special now. They're doing a movie. That poor woman.
Yeah, that's a good start. I can't wait to see when Neil faces the mirror. Where's he going to go?
You know it's going to be weird when Neil goes, I don't know if I should mention this, because Neil brings up the worst story. If it's something that Neil might not want to mention, it's probably time to turn off the radio. What else you got, dude?
Well, I will say this. I did a Dude, Are You Serious? On a story about underwear that supposedly stifles or can stifle farts, basically. So you wear the underwear, the diaper. It might be a diaper, but I'm pretty sure it's underwear. And anytime you fart, it basically like deodorizes it possibly. So I'm thinking like this opera singer chick should definitely look into it if she wants to continue singing opera. Otherwise, I mean, she's got to get into some kind of weird, you know, fetish video business. And I mean, those are pretty lucrative, but at the same time, you can't waste those pipes on the shower. You gotta let them out in the world. I think she just should go on tour, like a farting opera singer tour, and guys will definitely be into that. I would go see that.
Guys would be into that. Yeah, you got like on a Friday night, you got all these options to do whatever you want to do, and you go, you know who's in town? Old Sweet Pipes is in town. I gotta go check her out. Maybe you know what, Neil? Maybe that could be an episode of a Blackout. You wake up next to that chick, you know, because she's going to need work. Maybe she could be like a full-time character. She's like your therapist. She used to be an opera singer, and now she's the woman you turn to for advice. And throughout your little advice chat, she's just tooting away. Yeah. I'm just throwing it out there. It's your show. It's your pilot, dude. I'm not trying to tell you how to run your pilot, but maybe that's an idea you should explore.
I mean, but I might need some aid. in watching that farting opera singer in order to enjoy it. And I think I know just the solution. There's a marijuana. Now, marijuana, a lot has been made about how this is the marijuana bowl, right? It's the Colorado and Washington are two states where marijuana has been legalized beyond just medicinal, I believe. It's you can just get it for recreational use. And so there was a marijuana grower, I believe, in Washington who's created a strain of weed nicknamed Beast Mode after Marshawn Lynch. Now, you know, this happens all the time. But I think that, you know, it might be worth a trip to Seattle to partake, but only for this reason. Because there's now a Skittle sausage. And it's basically sausage. I think it's a sausage with Skittles in it. And it's in honor of Beast Mode Marshawn Lynch. The meat is ground. The candy is added at the same time as the spices. And it's shaped into links. Skittle sausages. So I think, you know, I've brought up a bunch of different weird foods from across the country, served in stadiums and whatnot. I don't know. I might have to draw the line at Skittle sausage. I don't even know if the Beast Mode strain could help me out there.
You did have a message on the message board as you were telling that story there, and it sounds like medicinal marijuana might be legal in Hoboken right now because you were very into this. Skittles wrapped in pig intestines. Skittles is one of the things I was going to mention in my article as this is one of the annoying storylines we have to continuously hear about during the Super Bowl 2 week lead up to it. The guy likes Skittles. Cool. It was a cool story for like 1 second on the local news. They have to make like this whole thing. The guy eats Skittles. They did a ESPN science breakdown of how it actually helps this guy on the field. Really? That's what ESPN has to do. They have their crack team of scientists. And now we got some stoner out in Washington, A, just copyright infringement. I mean, you can't just name something after this guy's nickname. Yeah. He did that. That's fine. And then they have guys making sausages with Skittles for this guy. And people have probably eaten it up. Now, I don't know, as a Jets fan, if Marshawn Lynch, maybe I'd be singing a different tune. I don't think I would. Because I was not a guy who liked Fireman Ed, and I was one of those guys that's like, this guy's just cheesy. It like makes you – I liked him when I was, you know, 14. But, you know, I didn't like him when you're going to games and it's like, oh, cool, now we all stand up because Fireman Ed's on somebody's shoulders. So it's like I wasn't into those gimmicky things. I don't know if I would be as anti-Skittle story as I would be if Marshawn Lynch was Jet, but I think I would be like, shut up about the freaking Skittle, dude.
He's gone from pot to Skittles and sausage, Fireman Ed. I've never been so flummoxed in my life.
You haven't been the same John Havlicek comedy.
Yeah.
So you have to sit down. I haven't seen you sit down on this show. And then in 6 months, he's just sitting down.
I feel like I got like lasers.
You got Trank. And you're just like, forget this, dude.
Yeah. I mean, you want to comment on all this stuff?
What do we got to comment on? Would you eat Skittles sausage?
I love sausage, but I'm disgusted by it. throwing Skittles in it.
Imagine just catching a quick Skittle in a sausage.
No, I mean, in the pot thing, who cares? But they named the pot after this guy's nickname. I mean,
that's another thing that's annoying is how many people on Facebook have shared that little Facebook meme of the stoner sitting there saying the two states that legalized pot are playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And the Bulls got quotes after it. Like enough,
I'm
dude.
Amazed that people still find marijuana usage to be quote unquote deadly. Everyone has known someone that used it today. I mean, medicinally or just for recreation. I mean, who cares?
Exactly.
It's such a nothing drug that I could not care less.
Yeah.
I appreciate Neil bringing it to our attention. I heard the Beast Mode pot thing last night, and I just looked at it like with this glazed over, like, I don't care.
Yeah,
I just want to watch the Super Bowl. And
I
don't care about any of that.
But that's just filler, dude. All right, Neil.
I still have next. I want to know something else.
Where are we going to segue? That was a good segue to that one. I'd love to see you segue this into something else.
Well, I mean, I think the craziest part of this whole thing is that Skittles just now reached an endorsement deal with Marshawn Lynch. I mean, isn't that crazy? I mean, you'd think they would have been all over it from day one. Instead, it took him this long to get on the Beast Mode train, and now it's like, who knows? He might be done after next year. It's like, how much more can they get out of the guy?
This is a company whose idea of like a good commercial is some nerdy pimple-faced kid with Skittles as teeth.
Yeah.
That was like, I mean, it's the grossest commercial on television right now. He smiles and his teeth are all Skittles.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's the grossest commercial on television. That's their go-to thing. It doesn't surprise me. It took them, you know, 18 months to jump on board with the beast mode.
Yeah. I just want to reiterate what you said, which was, I mean, I saw the piece that ESPN did on Marshawn Lynch and his mom growing up in Oakland, going to Cal, all that stuff. And he's a guy, for me, I mean, his time in Buffalo was not going well. He's a guy I could root for.
Absolutely.
He grew up on the tough, mean streets of Oakland. He goes to Cal, which is a great school, great football player, everything. Seems like a nice enough guy. They talked to his mom about the Skittles thing. His mother seems like a sweetheart, and she gave him Skittles when he was a kid to give him energy. And it was great.
Yeah.
And it tugged on your heartstrings. Kid who grew up on the mean streets, made it big. Enough. It's enough. I mean, at this point, it's just enough. I just want to watch the game, see how Marshawn Lynch plays against Denver, move on from it. Skittles. When's the last time you ate a Skittle, by the way?
Oh, years.
Because you know why? Because you're an adult now.
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't even pick up a bag of Skittles. Like, you're at the I got to think. I didn't know that. These are two for a dollar. But one more thing about Marshawn Lynch. He was mic'd up when he was with the Bills on that Showtime show, whatever, the one with Chris Collinsworth and all those guys. And that's what made me start liking this guy. So they were terrible, and he was getting just pounded. But he would get just destroyed by a linebacker in the hole. And he'd laugh. He'd be like, "Oh boy, that's a good hit." Like, he was not like you, man. Like, he was just talking to these guys like he was playing in your backyard. And this guy was, you know, he's the anti-Richard Sherman. And these guys, everybody on the field, he's talking to. Oh, that's a hell of a hit. That's a hell of a block. You see that block right over there? Like, they're just like, he's talking like he's not playing in the NFL, like in front of millions of people. And I'm like, this guy's cool. Like, this guy, like, you know, the anti, like, superstar guy. And he's the toughest guy in the league.
My favorite thing about him was where he said when he got drafted by the Bills, and he landed in Buffalo for the first time, he actually thought it was New York City.
Yeah, I did hear
that. And I'm not saying that as, like, you know, he's not a bright guy. I'm just saying that, to me, is so funny. Why would a kid from Oakland give a crap where Buffalo is at any point in his life? Just like someone in Buffalo is not worried about what's going on in Oakland.
Yeah.
And he goes, I landed there, and he just saw, like, snow and cold. And he's like, where the hell am I?
That kid.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, so that whole deal, the troubles he had off the field, he seems to have righted himself. He doesn't like the media, which I think is hysterically great. That's enough. Skittles. I don't care if he eats Skittles or whatever it is. I just want to watch him play football.
There you go. All right, Neil, what's next, dude?
It's kind of interesting. It's not really crazy or bizarre or anything like that, but I guess Fox invited a bunch of diehard Seahawks fans to watch the NFC Championship game, and they were challenged to stay silent the entire game, and if they could, they would win $5,000.
Yeah, I watched that. It was actually really cool. Did you watch that at all?
No.
It was actually a pretty cool thing. So they had these diehard. They ran the youth program in Seattle, some, you know, Pop Warner or whatever it was, and they were going to win $5,000 for their league if they could stay silent. And so they were showing clips from the whole game, like all these big games or plays were going on, and they were, like, jumping on each other and not talking. If you haven't seen, I'll just put this at the end, when Sherman intercepts that pass, they just erupt, like, screaming, like, you know, they couldn't contain themselves. And the guy comes out and, like, you know, we really appreciate you guys being diehard fans. But, you know, you guys didn't lose, so we can't give you the $5,000. Instead, we're going to give you $50,000 for your league. So it's pretty cool. It's actually a pretty, like, that type of thing.
Yeah,
it's something that's pretty cool.
Could you do that? Could you watch a Jets AFC Championship game? And for $5,000, whether it's for your family or for whatever, could you sit there? Because I got to tell you, watching a Kansas game, it's impossible. There's too many expletives coming out.
I'm just trying to think of not so much the first AFC Championship game the Jets went to, or the second one when Roethlisberger got that first down on 3rd and 8 when they were like, they're going to run it and just punt it, or they're going to go for it and he scrambles, gets out of the pocket and makes that completion. I don't know that there's any amount of money that would have really been able to keep that emotion in. I don't know. It would be interesting to see if we could do it. Neil, you think you could do that? Would you be able to accept your mouth shut for $5,000 and Kyrie caught that pass off his helmet?
I don't think I could. Maybe up the ante a little bit, and I just had, like, you know,
if it would have been
I had.
$50,000. I guess you attack $50,000.
Quiet.
You'd be pretty quiet.
Yeah.
I just would have watched the game, maybe.
I just have too much raw emotion when I watch teams that I like.
What about it though? They're watching with like 8 guys.
Yeah.
What if just one guy screamed? Would you be so angry at that guy? Like, you kept your mouth shut.
Did they all have to do it?
They all had to. It was only $5,000 total for this league.
Yeah,
imagine the one joker just can't keep it. How pissed would you be if Neil goes fired up about David Tyree?
Yeah, especially because that pass to the one that Sherman bat out of the air, that came in the last minute.
Yeah.
So you've done it for 59 minutes and change.
Yeah, and you get
like,
to that point.
It's like, bozo, just keep your mouth shut. Why are you?
But they all went nuts.
Yeah, I know. That's a cool story. It's nice to give in the
15
minute anyway. Yeah. That stuff is nice.
Would have been an absolutely backfired in from just from the first kickoff. They were just struggling. And then Fox has just spent all this money, cameras and everything, and just turn the cameras off.
Oh,
here's a bag of Skittles. Get the hell out of here. All right, what else you got, dude?
This was actually last week, but I didn't get to it, and I just think it's hilarious. The winner of the first annual Bud Selig Leadership Award was Bud Selig.
Say what again?
I dare you, motherfucker. I mean, you know, a lot of people are saying that that he's going to be go down as the greatest commissioner of all time, and that history will, you know, as history goes, so will people's memory, and that, you know, he'll be known as restoring honor and whatever to baseball. But come on, dude, are you serious with this? Ugh, it's just covered in ugh.
Here's the thing that I think, and I'm sure Dan is a baseball purist you don't like. You know, he's the one that introduced the wild card, and then the second caveat to the wild card is playing game. I really like the playing game. I think it solves the problems of the wild. I think all of that was good for baseball, the three divisions. I think it's helped. I mean, look at, like, the season we had 2 years ago when there was three games going on, and they all ended within a half hour of each other. Like, that was one of the most memorable days of baseball history, in my opinion, and that wouldn't have happened without that. But with the exception of that, which probably would have happened regardless of who was the commissioner, because at this point it's all about TV money and all the rest, I think that's just a natural evolution of sports, and it would have been, you know, I mean, the NFL's talking about adding another playoff game. So you can give him some credit for that. To give him credit for anything else that he's done is a joke.
I mean, I wouldn't give credit to anybody from Landis to Seattle. Not one of the commissioners, Faye Vincent or Cooley Kuhn, any of those guys. To me, they're just talking heads.
Yeah.
The game has evolved into this friggin' thing that it is now, and I'm putting all the money and stuff aside. I'm just talking as a purist, a fan. I'm tired of Bud Selig. I'm tired of all the sweeping stuff under the carpet. Now he comes out like the knight in shining armor on the A-Rod thing and all these steroids.
Yeah, I mean, that's a joke.
He allowed it for the longest time. They all allowed it because their pockets were getting full. So now I'm supposed to look at him like what he was.
Yeah.
You go back to Faye Vincent, you go back to Giamatti, and all those guys, Louie Kuhn tried to kick Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays out of the game. I mean, it's a gambling thing they did in Vegas or something. They're all bums, every one of them, and I'm so tired of people telling me the bright side of Bud Selig. I agree with you, but I also agree with you on the fact that it would have happened anyway. More wild cards, more things, more games, more money, whatever the hell they want to do. But to tell me that Bud Selig wasn't bad for the game.
Yeah.
Is telling me that I don't have two eyes, 2 ears, and I haven't watched baseball for my entire life. He's just a clown.
He's a clown.
The whole debacle with the All-Star game in friggin' Milwaukee, the whole deal was that there was no collusion. No one ever talked about it when he just gave up rights to the Brewers that he owned to his daughter or something and became commissioner of the game. I mean, to me, it's just the whole thing stinks. He stinks. Every commissioner stinks. And I thought that for a long time.
The only thing that would shed a good light on him and make me think a little bit better of him is if Bob Costas becomes the next baseball commissioner, because he's that bad. Like, we'll look at Bob Costas and be like, remember how great it was in the fucking field? Like,
yeah, let me tell you the most annoying thing about Bob Costas is the fact that he thinks he played on those Yankees teams he watched growing up. Like, he talks about Mickey Mantle as though he was flanking him in the outfield at, like, Fenway.
He didn't play for the Soto Pizza Yankees in Little League.
And I agree, and we've talked a little bit about Costas, but we
can't say it.
He stinks. And see him on the Ken Burns documentaries?
Yeah, exactly.
All with that Goodwin lady, I just want to blow up my television. I don't want to hear any of what they have to say about
Just have the blow-up button. Just.
One of the things with that Goodwin lady, they have Monty Irvin, the Hall of Fame New York Giant, talking. And they follow up his thing with Goodwin disagreeing with him.
You didn't like what he had to say.
You're going to tell me that's something I have to listen to.
You did. Did you not listen to it?
Well, because Ken Burns is great.
Yeah, and the documentary was great.
It's great. So, I mean, Bob Costas, do you think they'll honestly make him commissioner of this friggin' league?
No, but there's, like, serious talk. It's not like – maybe that's just, like, the media thinking that that's how powerful they are.
That would be so
– he would be great for the game because I mean, name one reason why he'd be great for this game.
I don't have one.
No. He couldn't throw a ball. If he had to throw the first pitch of, like, the World Series,
yeah.
he couldn't reach all places.
Yeah. I agree.
No way.
I don't think I don't think he would have gotten picked on his football team. I don't think he would have made his high school team.
No.
I think he was the guy keeping stats in the corner, talking about metrics in, like, 1950.
Yeah.
Telling his buddy, well, you know, you're batting 340, but
yeah.
your war is -8.
He was the first one for
yeah.
the Commodore 64 to go out and buy Micro League Baseball. All right, what else you got, Neil?
The Raiders cheerleaders, the Raiderettes, are suing the team or the organization because they make something like $5 an hour. How much do you think cheerleaders should get paid, and how much would you pay to have a squad of cheerleaders follow you for like a day, a week, or a month?
You want to take this one first?
Yeah.
Question 1A is how much should they get paid?
Well, it's at least minimum wage. Shouldn't they? I mean,
yeah, yeah.
You can't pay somebody $5 an hour.
Yeah. Well, I think what the thing is, I actually knew a girl who was a Jersey City, whatever the Net City Dancers were or whatever.
Yeah.
With the Hofstra, we had a good friend whose wife was on a dance team and she was on a dance team. And I knew, that's how I knew they made, like, no money. And that was just, like, their little side. And they, you know, much more than, like, they have to work a lot more than the NFL cheerleaders
yeah.
do. But I think the way that they get around that is, like, well, but you also make so much money off the calendars and all that. Sign, you know, so it's like, someone's like being like a waiter. Like, they're allowed to get paid on their minimum wage because they make tips. These girls make so much more off of the other things. So what should they get paid? I mean, I guess you're probably right, minimum wage. I mean, the thing is, like, they still have thousands of people come try out for this.
I got to be honest. I had no clue what they made.
They make teams.
I would have
girl made like $10,000 or $12,000 for being Net City Dancer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to make myself sound like an idiot, but I would have thought they would get, like, $400-$500 a game. You know what I mean?
Well,
I had no idea what
they probably do. They probably do make $400 a game for day home games. So you're talking about that, but all the practices is where they come up with their $5 an hour. You know,
that's what they get paid to practice.
Well, that's what they get paid in total. So if you break down, it's like, you know, all
for a game that takes 3 hours, they're gonna make $15. $5 an hour.
No, but all the if you include all the practice, they probably have to practice 3 hours a day all week long. So they're not working 3 hours for the week. They're saying we work 30 hours this week on all the practices.
And
we
$5 got, an hour for all.
Or whatever it is. It makes $200 a game. And it's just silly if it's that little bit.
Stupid.
But again, like, why would we pay more if clearly the demand is there because
the
supply is there, I mean. Because
$10 billion a year. They should at least pay these girls.
Their budget for the cheerleading collection probably more than $20,000.
That's all I'm saying. I mean, I never gave any thought on what cheerleaders pay.
Yeah.
Now that I'm guessing, I would have guessed probably about half a million a game and $200 a practice. I don't know.
Yeah,
no. I know about
yeah, I think they probably make a couple grand for the whole season.
And I don't want anybody talking. I'm still talking about they'll follow you around for the day or the week or whatever. Nobody needs to see. You know?
No.
Me going to the grocery store and picking up some.
Right, coffee. Exactly right. Then you'd feel like you'd have to have your
yeah.
together all the time.
I'm not that exciting.
I mean, I could be witty 2 hours a week. I mean, eventually you're in like a caravan full of cheerleaders. You know. You're in the car, you want to sing along to some Pearl Jam or something like that, and all of a sudden, no, you got to just pretend you like Justin Bieber or something like that.
Yeah, don't do that.
I don't know. Neil, I mean, Neil, you're in a precarious situation because you're now relationship Neil. I mean, I'm sure single Neil would have paid a lot of money for that. Now that you understand what we're saying about, like, the downside of having cheerleaders follow you around, what would you pay?
Well, so according to this article, They make an annual salary of $1,250. So, I mean, I think I could scrounge up 1,300 bones for these chicks to follow me around for friggin' 4 months, right?
We could pay $1,300 to have them just do all of our intros to the show.
Yeah.
I would pay $1,300 to every time, to just, you know, every time, every one of our pictures when we do our, like, little article, every time I hold it up, like, I love Dan Santarella. Or just maybe have one of the girls just pull out this fight before every show.
Dan is a great guy. You all should put a statue of him right out in front of that station. Dan is a remarkable person because he grew up with the Cubs.
How much would it cost? 13 seconds.
Yeah.
How much would it cost to get one of these, like, the Jets, like, you know, flight crew to do that 13 seconds? It would cost us what? 28 cents?
Yeah.
At what their going rate is right now? Well, why not? We got money coming. We got sponsors coming at the wazoo here. I think we could just, well, let's put a call into Woody, the close friend. I'll put a call.
Do it.
I'll send him a text. Woody, we need one of the, we'll pay for her travel, Metro North.
Yep.
We'll get her up here. Talk her going to South North. She'll talk with Neil. Neil, you can take that trip.
Yep.
And we'll give her a nice George Washington, give her 13 seconds worth of time, and we'll send her on her way. I'm not going to drive her. She got to pay for her own fare back to the train station.
Yeah,
I'll pick her up. I'm not dropping her off.
By the way, is there any bank that ever stated anything more true than that?
Come on.
How remarkable am I?
She's a fourth-string producer, probably fifth-string.
Fifth-string, yeah. You know, your wife would be able to do this before I would. If I ever did the show by myself,
you have to have my wife.
She'd be my crutch. I'd be like, you got to come down here and pick me.
Yeah. All right, Neil, what else you got, dude?
Well, I feel like there's beginnings, the makings of a new sub-segment within Dude, Are You Serious? And it's called High Point, Low Point. Here's the low point. Vince Young files for bankruptcy at the age of 30. I thought the dude was already bankrupt.
Yeah, he pulled himself. I thought he was, too, because there was a story that he had loaned $30 million or whatever. The fact that he pulled himself out of almost bankruptcy only to wind up there a year later. Okay, so that's the low point, yeah.
Low point. So then you're Vince Young. You somehow still have your electric bill. You still have your electricity in your apartment, and you're still able to watch the TV or go on the Internet or turn on the radio, and you hear that, or you see or you hear that Floyd Mayweather bet $10.4 million on the Broncos to win the Super Bowl.
He changed the line. Line shifted when he made his bet.
What do you bet on?
I don't know. He'll post it though. Maybe that did come out. What he did. I just know that the line shifted when he made that bet. It probably did come out. Who we picked? Denver. The audience is saying Denver. It's probably, we could easily figure that out because we would know which way it went. I just don't know which way it went. But yeah, I mean he likes to take pictures of his bet tickets to make sure that you know it's legit. He doesn't tend to post a lot of his losers though. But when he wins, I bet $1 million on whatever. You know, he likes to show that off. So the question is, how does High Point, Low Point work again? I mean, clearly Vince is at the low point.
I would say so.
How does the game work?
Well, there's no real game. It's just last week, Kellen Winslow was in his SUV jerking it in the lot parking lot of Target while you got some freshman at OK State taking a porn star to the AVNs. High Point, Low Point.
Yep. High point, low point. There you go.
Wow.
I mean, Money Mayweather, as much as I dislike the guy, I mean, if you had that kind of money to just drop 10 mil, why did he pick 10.4 mil? Like, that's a weird number to bet. Whatever that big was.
Did he bet the money line?
I don't know.
I just want to see him beat the hell out of Manny Pacquiao. I'm so upset that fight won't happen. I can't tell you.
10.4 million total.
It's 10.4 million total. So he had to spread it out. Yeah, because one casino probably wouldn't take that kind of action. I want that.
Most of them lay off the action anyway with each other. I've always heard. Most of the casinos are interconnected, and they'll say, you know, we need to balance our books to make a 50-50 money each way. And so the win will get money over here, and this guy will get money over there.
It's no shock Dan Santarello knows the inner workings of Las Vegas.
I don't know for a fact. I've heard that.
Yeah.
So
you and Mo Green are out there.
You and Mo. I was making my phone in the city.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, poor Vince Young, guy couldn't catch a job anywhere. He's standing up. He's got Gatorade all over his face just because I brought up Vince Young's name again. But so, yeah, I mean, that's tough. That's a tough thing. And everybody just showed that picture of him with, like, his shirt off at the nightclub, and he had dropped, like, 200 Gs at a nightclub. I don't know. I get, like, spending crazy money on things. Like, I get Mike Tyson buying Tigers. I don't get the thing of, like, dropping 200 G's at a strip club. I don't
know.
If I went bankrupt and be like, well, at one point I did own a freaking Tiger, you could almost, like, justify that to your kids. You know, you got to pay your own way. You got to get a Pell Grant to go to college.
Yeah.
But Grandpa had a Tiger.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the whole Vince Young thing is a sad story.
I always remember that national championship game.
It was
a man among boys.
Yeah.
It really was. Like, he was playing at a different speed, and he was like, looked at it on the way there, I was run, whatever.
Yep.
It was a man amongst boys. It was that was something to see. And then the guy's record as a starter in the NFL right now is well over 500. It's like he's like 30-10 or something crazy. It's amazing this guy can't get a job somewhere. There's some really bad quarterbacks. John Skelton was a starting quarterback last year. He's probably still in the league somewhere. John Skelton, I don't know what he's doing, but he was as bad of a quarterback as I've seen at the professional level.
Yeah.
And he had a job.
Mark Brunell quarterback, I believe, in the 60s, didn't he?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And here's Vince Young. He's one of the best college quarterbacks I've ever seen
in
my time. I mean, a dominant player at a time when the Big 12 was one of the best leagues in the country. He dominated
that. But he wasn't Danny Werfel, where he was like clearly like after the pros. Like,
right,
no. He's had one game. He's had one game in the pros. I'm going to look up his record as you're going up to the next duty of your series. Or are you wrapping it up with High Point, Low Point, Neil?
I got to talk about these new caps that Major League Baseball approved for pitchers. Have you seen a picture of this thing?
No, I saw just the headline. They approved, like, the helmet cap or whatever.
They're introducing these padded hats for pitchers, and I guess only pitchers, to reduce the probability of being injured on a comebacker. You know, a line drive back up killed a guy in 2007, but that multiple pitchers have suffered from over the years. And I'm looking at this hat, and it is gross. It is Del Grosso. I mean, it is. It might save a lie, but it will not save you from ridicule. In fact, one of the pitchers, Brandon McCarthy, who had been hit by a line drive, said he unequivocally will not be wearing one in its present form. And you thought Wes Welker's concussion helmet was bad. This is like special education times 1,000.
Yeah, it's like when Wild Thing Rick Wong gets his glasses and Coach Brown's like, well, you know, seeing is the most important thing. And Willie Mays is like, ain't that important? I mean, it's so rare that it would happen. I wouldn't wear it. If I was a professional football player, I'd wear the concussion helmet because who else cares? But I think it would be a distraction to be wearing something that's like a helmet on your head, right?
These things look like, remember Mark Pelto, who's played for the Bills?
Yeah.
He's got that enormous helmet. He had some kind of brain problem or something. That's what these pitchers' hats look like. To me, they just look too cumbersome almost. But I think the fact that McCarthy, who had that horrible injury, the fact that he, which I saw yesterday, he won't wear, tells you something, because this is a guy who literally could have been killed.
Oh, fuck, I'm looking at it now.
You know what I mean?
It's a helmet.
Yeah.
Just put on why don't they just put on a regular helmet like Don Olds used to wear? It's way better than this.
Yeah. I do think, though, I know you said it's rare, but I do think they have something. You're talking about by the time they land and they're 54, 5 feet from the plate.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you would never have a third baseman or first baseman stand there all game long and not have something on. I mean, I do think something needs to be done, but in this day and age, the technological advances, they got to do better than that.
You would think
they
would come up with something. They got a cloak in the military that makes people invisible.
Yeah. It's kind of like Lord of the Rings, like when Frodo and Samwise are hanging out.
There you go. All right, I'm going to segue from Frodo Baggins to back to Vince Young's career record, 31-19. This is not a guy who didn't succeed.
So what happened?
Can't get a job.
He had the mental breakdown thing he had when he was in Tennessee, right?
Yeah, but then
he disappeared.
He went and played a little bit with Philly.
Yep.
Went 1-2 there, but still wasn't like he was an utter disaster. Somebody can't pick him up.
I would take
the
him up
third,
on the
third
tomorrow.
Right now,
they're trying Josh Freeman.
Yeah, you can't get Vince.
Clearly, he's a bust.
Vinny Young a shot.
I don't know. There's got to be something to it.
All right, Neil, that's all you got, or you got any more helmet stories, flatulence stories? What else you got?
I mean, I mentioned this on Twitter and maybe Facebook, but Eli Manning giving Peyton Manning tips on how to handle MetLife Stadium. My knee-jerk reaction to that was, dude, are you serious? But then I looked into it a little bit. And, you know, obviously Eli has had a greater sampling to pull from, but his numbers, oddly enough, has a better rating than Peyton at MetLife Stadium. Now, Peyton's only played a handful of times against the Jets and the Giants there. But if you look at their stats, my initial reaction was there's no way that Eli is a better quarterback than Peyton at MetLife. But you look at the stats, and Eli has a better rating. Now, he doesn't have a better completion percentage or better yards per game average, but he does have a better rating. So Maybe Eli is right in giving his big bro some tips.
Yep. Now, off the air last week, Dan and I had a conversation before the show. We were talking about Peyton Manning's record in cold weather. And remember what I said? I said, well, how many of those games are on the road?
Right.
I mean, in the NFL, your home road splits are always going to be drastic. So how are you going to compare somebody playing in their home stadium with their home crowd as opposed to being a visiting team with against the home crowd on offense? I mean, it's not like this was a neutral site. It's not like he was playing for the Titans, and then when he came to MetLife, he dominated. He was playing in his home stadium. I saw that same people were making that comparison when that article came out. Well, his numbers are better. You're like, dude, I mean, he's playing at home. Of course his home stats should be better than somebody coming into his building. Apples and oranges, dude, no?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It just stinks. I mean, if you ask Phil Simms about what his time at Giants Stadium, and I don't know that he ever really ended up mastering that domain. You know what I mean? To use a Seinfeld reference. I just think it's just a horrible stadium to play in. And, you know, some people just can't even get a grip on it. So either way, it's absurd that Eli is providing tips to Peyton. You know, strictly because he's younger, he's had less experience in the NFL. I mean, you know, I guess when it comes to the Super Bowl, he can give some tips. Like, here's how you win a Super Bowl. But I found it to be really absurd. And, you know, if anything, it goes to show that, you know, the Giants, you know, are in a tough spot at the quarterback position. And it'll be, you know, this year will be huge for Eli, because if he has another subpar year where he throws 20-some-odd picks, I mean, you got to draft someone or bring someone in to compete with him, don't you?
Yeah, he's done it time. He's led the league in picks how many times? 3 times at least.
Well, who they should draft, seriously?
Who should they draft?
Hodge, Foley, Clemson.
This year?
He would be a phenomenal quarterback. I don't know enough, you know, and I'm not a psychic or anything, but I think he's going to be a really good pro. I think he'll fall
in. They just drafted Nassib in what, the second or third round? He's going to be garbage?
I don't think Nassib's anyone as good as Boyd was playing in the same draft.
What did they get him in the third round, Nassib, last year? Fourth round?
Yeah, I believe it was fourth round, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so.
Boyd's going to probably fall into that second, third, maybe fourth round. Big shot on him.
Yeah.
You got to start having the foresight now to see that Eli is going to be at the end of his rope in a few years, at least, if he's not already. Maybe Nassib's next Joe Montana. But I never saw enough of Nassib at Syracuse to say
he didn't catch a lot of Syracuse games.
No. I mean, I saw enough of him to have a thought in my head, but I never saw him and said, you know, that's an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
Truthfully, there's a lot of guys I didn't think that about.
Yeah.
But I think Todd Boyd's going to be a guy who could fall into their wheelhouse. There's, you know, 31 other teams, but I think he's going to be better than Bridgewater, better than Bortles, better than, you know.
Is that right?
That's what I think.
And I don't have any idea where the ex-guru is, like, you know, McShay and...
They got those guys?
Yeah, well, they got the kid from Central Florida, like...
Bortles. They got him or Manziel going. They got Bortles. McShay does going to the Vikings.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that going, I would rather have Todd Boyd.
Yeah.
And to me, he does everything those other guys do, except for Manziel. Nobody loves like Manziel does. Bridgewater just never, I mean, how many Temples and Rutgers and South Florida and stuff can you play against, and you want me to compare him to a guy playing in the ACC?
I've said my worries about Todd Boyd on the show or maybe off the air about the fact that he had Sam Lockett.
Yep.
And you wonder if it's like the Brandon Whedon, like, put up this crazy number because he had Justin Blackman. You don't think that's the case
at all?
Look at
the numbers when Sammy Watkins was suspended and when he was out with the leg injury.
I don't know who they played. I mean, I know I saw...
No, but his numbers...
They
really,
were consistent.
Consistent. He's a consistent quarterback.
I mean, my brother's a Clemson fan, so he loves him. He always tells me about
him. I'm a big fan of him, dude. And I'm constantly baffled by people that knock him.
And what's the knock against him? I don't know. I mean,
the knock against him is the, what do you call it, throwing motion or whatever, that, you know, he holds the ball too low. There's a lot of stuff you heard.
He's painting about Philip Rivers.
No, I know, but it's kind of like the stuff I heard about Tebow, but not quite, you know, as pronounced as that. And I look at it and go, I don't know why anyone talks bad about this kid. You know, other than the stinker they played against FSU this year in Death Valley, where everyone on Clemson stunk for the whole game, he never really stunk.
Yeah.
He played really well against Ohio State. And everybody's going, well, Bortles is better than him. Well, I would like to see Todd Boyd playing UCF schedule this year and Bortles playing Clemson.
Yeah.
And what they're going to be in 5 years, who knows. But
I love how you took over Duty You Serious and talk about college football. I love how you did that.
Let's talk about some hockey.
We're going to take a break right now.
I got a question for Neil. I know Neil follows the lead.
Why don't you jump over me? You want a question for me?
Because you're wearing a white beater.
And white beater Wednesday. All right, I'll be right back. Try it, please. Okay.
Is anyone out there? This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, what we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. Is anyone out there?
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
All right, we're back. We've got about 15 minutes left on the show. It's time for Danny's rant on some hockey talk here. We have been, I've been stabbed on the outdoor game here, but I've not been giving you any updates on it because I know you're T-bowing it or whatever you're doing. You're going to watch when you get home. Kevin, what are you going to talk about with the NHL? I mean, you have your open floor. I'm even going to kind of segue into, like, what I want you to talk about.
Yep.
I want you to tell me something I'll be interested in about the NHL.
Well, here's the thought I've had lately, and it's a question, and I'm only bringing Neil in it ahead of you because he follows the league a little bit more closely than you do. But I am starting to think, as an Islanders fan, that John Tavares might be the best player on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they get beat by Pittsburgh tonight, 6-3, on the island. Towards the end of the game, big face-off, offensive zone for the Islanders. They send Crosby out. They throw off Pittsburgh does, and the Islanders send Tavares on a call. It's a microcosm of what the Islanders could be. It's going to be Crosby and Tavares, huge draw 17 seconds ago, and Crosby won it like I was taking the goal. He just clearly won it. And then I started to backtrack, but then I'm looking at what he's doing, the numbers he's putting up on a team that – has only one line, in Mofoso and Bannock. We get the other team's best defensive pair every shift on the ice, whereas with the Penguins, who run three really good lines, you can't do that. I mean, they have Malkin playing on the second line. He needs some attention from great defensemen. And here's Tavares, second in the league in scoring on a brutal team. Why is he not the best player on the planet right now? He's 10 points behind Crosby.
Can I just jump in quick before Neil gets his thing?
Yeah.
Just as a ignorant non-hockey fan.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
A few Islanders games, I've probably seen bits and pieces of 4 or 5 Islanders games this year. And I will tell you, as a guy who does nothing but hockey, you see this guy, and he's moving at a faster speed than anybody else.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. Like, you look at him, and you're like, whoa, this guy is like we talked about Vince Young. It's like, that, to me, that's how the difference is. Not even knowing, like, I don't even know what number he is, but you just see one guy, like, oh, that must be Tavares. It's like Lawrence Taylor and Tecmo Bowl to me, as a guy who doesn't know anything. Now, Neil, go ahead. Give your spiel.
I mean, it's the fact that they're getting third billing in the area, right? I mean, the Islanders are not – I mean, when you think of New York metropolitan area hockey, it goes Rangers, Devils, Islanders. You know, and the, you know, it's tough enough. It's tough enough for, like – you know, a Mets or a Jets, like a second billing team, to get their stars enough of a spotlight, and then now you got to worry about leapfrogging over two other teams in your own area. You know, now the Islanders, they finally got some attention last year because they were able to stick it to the Penguins and make that a series. So that brought some attention, but then you know now they haven't been able to really capitalize. They're sub 500, and they might miss the playoffs. So it's like they weren't able to build on the momentum. And you know, at least with Ovechkin and with Crosby, it's like they played for teams that made playoff runs consistently. You know, and Washington's not a big market. And Pittsburgh's not a huge market, but Pittsburgh's a huge hockey town. And, you know, I feel like Ovechkin was able to bring Washington back into the hockey talk, into the hockey scene. And they've made that Rangers rivalry heated again. But the Islanders, it's tough. You're competing against two other teams in your area, and for Tavares to really get the recognition he deserves, I feel like he has to go above and beyond. It's almost like, not to take the spotlight off of hockey, but it's almost like Kevin Durant in the NBA right now. I mean, Kevin Durant was an all-star before, but now it's like people are comparing him to Jordan and saying that he's going to take the throne from LeBron because now he's done, eight or nine consecutive games with 30-plus points. He's putting up, ridiculous numbers without Westbrook, and a lot of people are saying it's because Westbrook isn't around. So, but to get back to hockey, I think Tavares has to it's to the point now where, hockey, you can't just be, a solid points leader. You have to come out with, ridiculous moves or ridiculous shots or be outspoken. And I don't think Tavares does any of that, really, does he?
Well, I mean, the thing about Tavares, first of all, and I put Ovechkin to the side as a wing. I'm just talking about if you look at the four elite centers, you look at Tavares, you look at Crosby, you look at Getzlaf in Anaheim, you look at Taves in Chicago. Those are the four guys. Those are all Team Canada guys. Those are head and shoulders above the centermen in the league. I mean, Thornton and Pavelski are both good with San Jose, but you start talking elite centers. I mean, you look at Tavares, he has all the moves. He's not an outspoken guy. They had him mic'd up on a recent series on NBC Sportsnet where he talked more than I ever thought he would. He's the captain of the Islanders. He is an outspoken guy in the dressing room and all that. The thing I look at is the amount of focus a team has to put on him when they come to the Island or the Islanders come to see you. He is the guy. He is clearly the guy. I know Mike doesn't watch a lot of hockey, but even he says when he sees them, Tavares is head and shoulders above anybody else on that Islander team. And most nights he's the best player on the ice. And my contention is if you took the uniforms off those guys and you just saw Crosby versus Tavares, I don't think you could really distinguish between the two right now. And I think they're both a step above Getzlaf and Taves, who are maybe a little bit better defensively as centers. But you look at Tavares and Crosby, he has every move Crosby does. He has nowhere near the talent. He has no goaltending. And they're a 50-point team right now, and all those other three guys on teams with 70 or 80 points. And
can I just interject quick about, Sidney Crosby? Again, it's like a non-hockey fan giving the 2 cents. Sidney Crosby came in with all this hype, covered Sports Illustrated before he played a game, and, dropped a puck in the league. It's like the reason why I don't like Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper has all the talent in the world. But, people have already told us that he's great. He's made two All-Star games, even though he's a 270 hitter, hasn't had 20 home runs in the season yet. And so he's great. And the same thing with Crosby. He's always hurt. He's great when he plays. But, it's the same type of thing. Where Tavares has been a guy who's, he has hype around him. And I know I know the name, even as just being a general sports fan. But I think that's why people are going to, somebody's going to just give, if it's ever close, they're going to give the edge to Crosby because of the hype.
Well, they give him that. He's won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Getzlaf and Anaheim's won the Cup. And Taves has won too. But when people bring up that discussion about Tavares, it's like Neil said.
Who's going to win a Cup?
He's never going to win a Cup there right now. Maybe when they move to Brooklyn. But I remember that 09 draft. Tavares was the first overall pick. And it really came down to it was him. Victor Hedman, who was taken second by Tampa, and Matt Duchene, taken third by Colorado. And the discussion was the Islanders needed a forward. Was it going to be Tavares or Duchene? Duchene's another Team Canada guy this year, outstanding player for Colorado. But Tavares is the clear, correct choice. He is, if he's not the best player on the planet right now, and I love Jonathan Davis of Chicago. I wrote an article about him. I love that guy. But I really do think if you just took the uniforms off him and Crosby, you could not tell the difference if you swapped the two of them. That's how good Tavares is, and it is completely annoying on an epic level that no one around here talks about him, that I heard more discussion about Rick Nash being undeserving of being chosen for Team Canada just because he plays for the Rangers, and he was undeserving, and he is, than anybody talked about Tavares being picked up by Team Canada. Like they said, it was a no-brainer. Of course it was a no-brainer. He's going to be our second-line center.
Yeah.
I mean, they might even put him on the wing with Crosby they're talking about and see how that works. The kid is so good, and he's such a gentleman, such a nice guy. He plays such a clean game. His teammates come to his defense every turn like they do with every one of those other superstars. I mean, Getzlaf would beat up a grizzly bear, but the other three guys really aren't that kind of player. And you look at it and go, when when is he ever going to get talked about? And Neil's right. I mean, it's because you have the Rangers, you have the Devils. They both, for whatever reason, nobody calls the Devils here, but yeah, more people talk about the Devils.
Because of their past history. With the
because of their history and Brodeur and all that stuff. But Tavares is a guy right now that if he's not the best player on the planet, the best forward, he's second. He's second, and he's on our TVs around here almost every night, 82 times a year we get to see this kid play. And as an Islanders fan, I know I'm a little biased, and I don't dislike Rick Nash.
Yeah.
But he didn't deserve me.
But I don't think you are, Ted, because I know you as a fan, and you are a critical guy.
Very.
So it's not like you're one of those homers.
No.
Like I am with my guy.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, Daniel Murphy is a stud.
Right.
I know you'd be just – that's why I respect your opinion, because it's not like you're going to go out there and just be like wave the banner for whatever team you like. If he was a bust, you would tell him like I tell you about Darren Williams.
I remember as a kid, they signed Alexi Yashin, who was an enormous contract, and he was a complete bust. And Islanders fans still said, well, look how good he is. And no. He was a waste of money. He was a waste of everything. But the thing about Tavares people talk about is it's the best line in hockey. Almost everybody agrees on the NHL Network, on NBC Sportsnet. Jeremy Rohner talked about it last week. Him, Vanek, Okposo, best line in hockey. But no one ever turns around and then says, because the centerman is as good as he is.
Yeah.
But when it's Crosby, they go like this. They go, well, they play Kunitz on his left, and whoever they put on the right doesn't matter. That's how good Crosby is. It doesn't matter who they put on the right. But the fact is, every other night they put Evgeny Malkin out there who's he might be the best Russian on the planet. You know what I mean? I mean, he is every bit as good a two-way player as Ovechkin and a far better two-way player than Kovalchuk ever was. He's on Crosby's team.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for Tavares, Okposo, and Vanek, I mean, Vanek is over a point a game since the Islanders traded for him. He has not done that.
Yeah, yeah.
He's hit 39 points in 34 games because of John Tavares.
Yeah, right.
Because how great he is on a team with no defense, no goaltender. And truthfully, that's what I want to write an article about. And no one will care because it's the area we live in. People get irritated by any Islanders talk, apparently, and it's very bothersome. He's so good.
Can I just poke fun at you real quick?
Do it.
I've been, you know, I don't poke fun much. That's not my
job. No, never.
But, so you right now are talking about, they are great. Even as a guy who doesn't follow hockey, they're all great. But they don't get a ton of traction because, you know, it's a niche thing. Somebody commented on your hockey post the other day. And you were like, it was almost like you were on a first date. Like, you wrote a comment, and you had a typo in it, and then you wrote back another one, and then you wrote another comment.
Yeah.
You were like the person who keeps texting. I saw I missed a call. Was that you?
Yeah.
It was like,
that's the OCD.
No.
I was so bothered.
Neil, did you see that? That comment? Somebody posted a comment. And he posted three comments in like 1 minute. Not like right afterward, but it was just like he messed up the first time. And he I liked that. I thought it was funny.
I was so upset by that. A slow-no replay. That's what I thought.
Yeah, and then you wrote scat.
Yes.
Scat is cool.
Scatter. Yeah, no. Yeah. He's a very good scatter.
I was like, damn, so excited somebody wanted to talk hockey.
Yeah.
And then it was almost like you went on the first day with this hot chick, and the person was like, I'm not saying this guy's like, oh,
totally
never wrote again. Unfollowed us on Facebook, whoever that person was.
Yeah. But you want to know, seriously, what's going to happen? I'm going to go back to the mayor. That's your
view.
A non-sequitur view. Just go right back to it. The day he ends up trading, which is probably he'll end up in Toronto or he'll end up, God forbid, to the Rangers or something like that. Everybody's going to turn around 10 years from now and try to tell him he's like in his mid-30s. When he's ending his Hall of Fame career, they're going to go, this Tavares is unbelievable. Why didn't anyone ever talk about this guy when he was on the Islanders? And I'm talking about him now, and I'm telling people out there that even if you're not a huge hockey fan, he is without a doubt the best hockey player in the area.
Yeah.
It's not even close. There's no one the Rangers have anywhere close to as good as him. And we'll talk about him.
You'll be in a padded room somewhere just yelling at Tavares.
Yeah, he's on page like 45 of the New York Daily News or something going, by the way, Tavares has another 3.9 with a plus two, and no one cares. Here's Chris Kreider.
He skates really fast.
Yeah, he couldn't sharpen Tavares' skates.
All right, that's our show. Super Bowl this Sunday. Next week, we've got a good show. Hopefully, we have both of our producers back in studio, although I don't think we skip the beat without them. Can we shave? Maybe we could cut some fat off the show.
You want me to shave?
Yeah, no, I would never want you to shave. But, I mean, maybe I could just become the producer. Maybe talk a little less, produce a little more.
I'm going to buy
a cocktail, but we don't hate them.
All right, check us out every week, Wednesdays 8 to 10, TriStateSportsGuys.com, Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys, and follow us on Twitter @TriState_sports. Next week we'll start talking Olympics.
Can't wait. Hockey, more hockey.
Curling. All right, see you next week.
Are you cold?